It's like we're live with Ben Swan. I've been watching your stuff for a while. Just, I mean, not really. I haven't been that up on it, but some of your videos I saw like 10 years ago, and it wasn't really political. I think it was a Pizzagate one. Got you in a bit of trouble. But let's just real quick, let's go back, tell your story real quick. You were a regular mainstream news anchor, correct?
Yeah. Well, got into it because I was a news videographer first. I actually started out that way. Got married super young, had my kids really young, needed a job, was working in TV as a photographer. I had three brothers who were doing all the same thing. And they started having kids. I was like, I got to make more money.
Got to make money. You know? Kids.
Exactly. And so I convinced, it's a long story, but I basically convinced my boss at the time to give me a shot on air as a reporter. That's looking cool. In El Paso, so not too far from Vegas, right? It's in El Paso. And got a job. He gave me a gig, and I was kind of what they call it. Now they call him multimedia journalist. But at the time, it was called a one-man band. Basically means you do twice the work for half the pay. But I did that.
But you were probably excited just to do it.
I'm glad to do it.
You got to take those positions.
That's right. And I started out as a photographer and a videographer, then what was called a bureau chief. And Las Cruces, New Mexico was my first area that I was in. And then ended up becoming a morning anchor, primetime anchor. So just it had nothing to do with, you know, the pursuit of journalism integrity or greatness and, you know, broadcast. It was like, I need a paycheck. And I worked there three or four or five jobs at a time with that job because it paid so poorly. Did that for a lot of years. And then the first time, tell you a real quick story, the first time I ever really realized the power of what we were doing, I was working in New Mexico. I was a bureau chief in Las Cruces. There was this little girl who was killed. She was 5 months old. I remember we got a call to go out and cover the story. There's a child who's dead. Well, it turned out it was her mom, her dad, and her uncle who had beaten her to death.
Oh.
Right. And it was gruesome, but they hadn't beaten her to death in one setting. So they had thrown her into the ceiling, like playing a game with her where they would like knock the tiles off the ceiling, throwing her into it and biting her. It was crazy stuff. Crazy side. Yeah.
Pisses me off.
So what I found out when I started covering the story, and I was young, I was 23 years old covering this, and I found out that in New Mexico at the time, they had a distinction between something called child abuse resulting in death and murder. Meaning, if I went in and my child is acting up and I just said, I'm done with this, and I beat the child to death, I can be charged with murder, right?
Yeah.
But if I beat that child one day, just some, and the next day I come back and I beat them again, some, and the next day I come back and I beat them again, some, and eventually the child dies from that, you couldn't be charged with murder.
That's worse.
I think so too. It's ghastly.
Who makes these laws? That's just sick.
It was a law that had been for a long time.
Yeah, I'm a father. Like, just to treat your job is to protect your children. You know, you're a father. That's just sick.
Yeah, it was insane. And my oldest daughter at the time, her name is also Brianna. And so this little baby girl, baby Brianna, who had died. And
it really just like...
Yeah, it was just so sad.
You, yeah.
Well, what I found out, we started working on these stories, was there were actually 5 cases that had happened in the last year of this exact same thing. People who had beaten their children to the point of death, but none of them were being charged with serious. So what would happen is you could get up to 9 years in prison, was the max.
And you get off like half the time, probably.
Half the time off. So the average they were staying in prison was 3 years. So these people were
sick.
Were brutalizing their children to death. Yeah, in 3 years. So I started working. Again, I'm 23 years old. Started working with a prosecutor who was in the area. They had written a bill called the Baby Brianna Bill in New Mexico, which basically would make child abuse resulting in death now a capital crime, and you could be charged with murder and get the death penalty for it. So started covering it, and we got a lot of attention on it. And this thing finally got in front of the legislature, and Bill Richardson. At the time, people are hearing his name a lot more now, was the governor of New Mexico. Right. And he had said that he would sign this thing.
Yeah.
And the state legislature was going through. They were on the last day, and it didn't come up for a vote. And I was in Las Cruces at the time.
You put all this work to get it passed.
Yeah. And nothing had happened. And so I literally was with a guy who was my videographer. We got in the car. We drove from Las Cruces to Santa Fe, which is like, what, 8-9 hours. We drove to Santa Fe and got there that day, got into his office, and put a camera in his face and said, you said you were going to sign this bill.
Nice.
And today's the last day, and it has not been signed. And he said, no, come on, guys. Like, give me a break. And within 2 hours, that bill was being called in front of the legislature, and it was signed into law.
Good work. That wouldn't have passed without you.
You know, it would not have
happened. Just the right thing.
Yeah.
It does matter. They wouldn't spend billions of dollars on Media Machine forcing sales of, like, TikTok, but didn't matter. That's where I decided to start my own podcast. I wasn't happy with a lot of things out there. And it's like, well, I could bitch about it, or I can get in the arena and start doing it.
That's right. Yeah.
So it does matter. And that's a perfect example right there of something really good you did. That must have felt, I mean, it's the whole thing must have been troublesome, but at least you did something good with it.
Exactly. We were trying to take this horrific tragedy and make something better for the next kids who would come along. So it changed it. I was 23 and I realized I was like, you know, this job can't
be. Not a lot of 23-year-olds have done that, though. Driving down there, put your own time, putting the pressure on the guy like that because he wasn't going to do it. Why do you think he wasn't going to do it?
Just think there was a lot of pressure in the legislature to not. Legislatures don't like to change laws and they don't like to make things stricter. They like to add penalties onto people who aren't doing anything.
That's like crazy. This is like one of the most evil things ever. I mean, child abuse, which is why you've covered Pizzagate and you got in a little trouble for that, for people who don't know.
Yep. Absolutely. So flash forward all these years later, maybe there's a thread that runs through all this stuff, right? Because you asked the question, why would you not care about this? Well, at the time, I'm like, well, there's 1,000 reasons, right? You go forward, and then this was, again, 2003, I think, when this law was signed. 2002 or 2003. And you flash forward to 2016, right? So 13 years later. And by this time,
You've been a news anchor this whole time.
Been a news anchor the whole time. I've worked in Texas, I worked in Ohio, the Fox station. I worked at the CBS in Atlanta. Yep. That's where I was at the
time. You're pretty mainstream.
Mainstream, yeah. Every place I ever went, I was super blessed. Every place I ever worked as an anchor, we would go from a last place station, because that's the only reason they'd hire me, and we'd end up first place every single time.
You're always kind of doing real news, though. Weren't you always kind of pushing the boundaries, or no?
Always pushing boundaries. Sorry. And then I'd always end up...
That's everything. Actually, he's always been pushing boundaries, yeah. Well, that was Clark pushing Obama drone strikes. We'll get into that later. I want to know the Pizzagate stuff I saw early on, like 2011, I think it was.
And... Yep. Yeah, that was when I was with Fox in Cincinnati, so we can definitely talk about that, because we had to come to a point where they asked me to leave. And we went from, again, the last place station to the first place station in that market.
It just shows popularity doesn't matter. Tucker Carlson's a good example. Yeah. He was the number one anchor and he got fired.
Yeah.
So you become the top anchor and then they push you out.
Because you become the top by talking about things that are uncomfortable. And because the things are uncomfortable, they'd rather you be gone than have that. And they also, I think that on some level, a lot of times those networks will think too, it doesn't matter. We can replace them, right? And we can now in Fox's
now ratings wise it doesn't, but it shows you maybe they don't really care about ratings. Maybe they care about other things more than ratings. They care about ratings, but they care about other things more.
For sure.
And I think too, people probably can see that you're an authentic guy, you're curious, you're a truth finder. Yeah. So that's probably why people would regularly watch you and they would start trusting you.
Well, and I think when you're willing to, there were two very important things I think throughout my career. The trajectory of my career has always been about, again, doing the uncomfortable thing, but not for the sake of being a provocateur.
No,
a lot of people think that.
The way you were looking for truth.
Right.
That's what I didn't know a lot about you, but like always early on, it wasn't political. I liked you. And I could relate to your news. It just seemed like you were looking for truth, authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing is I despise being lied to.
Yes.
So I think one of the things that would stand out is it was sometimes my journalism is less of a pursuit of truth and it's more of an attack on a lie. I hate the lies. I hate when you get fed something and you're like looking at it. And that's happening so much right now.
Yeah.
Right. You can look at something with your eyes and say, I can see this is not true. And they're telling you. No.
Well, what's in 1984? They say the final and most essential command of the party is to ignore your own eyes and ears.
Yes.
So they don't want you to put something in front of you. That's why like the trans thing, I completely refused to because they just wanted you to ignore your own eyes and ears. Right. Be like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's like, no, it is. If we'll accept this, we'll accept anything.
Well, and the trans thing is a great example of that, right? Because you're looking at it saying, this is just not true.
Yeah, and they say, and they're trying to gaslight me like, oh, no, that is true. You just have to go along with it.
Yeah.
Just go
it's
along
true
with
because
it.
We're saying it's true.
Yeah.
And you're like,
you just have to go along with it or you're a bigot.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I think for a lot of people, and by the way, that's why Democrats lost the last election, among other things, including a lot of promises about no wars and all that. We could talk about that later, too. But I think the biggest... So I think Republicans and Trump won because of things they would say. I think Democrats lost because of things they would say. And the things they would say is, you have to believe this nonsense.
Yeah.
That's just not true.
Yeah. And everyone knows it. Everyone. Even the people saying it's true. 100% of people knows it's not true. But they're just trying to get you to repeat it.
Yeah.
You know, I lived in a lot of liberal cities during this time, and I just refused to go along with it. And everyone would be like, one-on-one, be like, yeah, I agree with you. But in groups, they wouldn't say it. And it's like, if everyone's telling me one-on-one, it's like, you guys are just, it's just weird how people just go into the group.
Oh, it's totally insane. It's insane.
We're seeing that now with like Trump support, people that are still hanging on to Trump.
So, unfortunately, yeah. I mean, that's kind of the sad part is that the people who, and this is why Trump's coalition, despite what they'll say, MAGA's fine, it's not fractured. CNN says 100% of MAGA Trump.
sorry, not believing your own eyes. 100% support MAGA. It's just like, no, we can see that people don't support him. Let's get back to the Pizzagate stuff. I know you want to talk about Trump, but let's hit this up first
No,
because it's like,
absolutely.
I think you've done such a good job reporting this. The initial news report I saw, I think that's the first time I saw it and actually looked into it after that. You just did such a good job. And you were just asking questions. You think you were like showing the sign that was the pedo sign that they use? You showed some of the bands, I believe, that played there.
At the
W
pizza
why don't you
place.
tell about some of these? This is Comet Ping Pong, owned by,
James Elefantis.
yes.
So the Pizzagate story, the reason it came to me is I had a long career before that of covering stuff that people wouldn't cover. And so I had a huge social following. In fact, I had the largest, by a measure of 10, the largest social following of any local news anchor in
About
America.
10, so that's like a
It was
huge.
massive. We had 500,000. The next closest person to me had 32,000.
And that's for like a small
For a
newsmaker,
local
half
news.
million. That's crazy.
And
No,
by the way, even at the time, I
that's
had
like
more than
mainstream.
Anderson Cooper had at the time.
Wow, and you were a small like that's
Yeah, like the
so people
local
really
paper
like
mattered. Well, and we also had a huge audience of people around the world because as part of the kind of, I'm kind of the OG of independent journalism, right? Me and Alex Jones, but I would say Alex is less journalism, even though that's not a dig on him.
No,
I think he does great stuff.
you're investigative journalism. He shoots different questions.
Results, right?
And I like Alex. I have disagreements. I've had arguments with him, but
Same.
overall, I respect him.
I do too. I do too. And I think the more you go back into the history of what Alex Jones has said, the more you can respect him because again,
I
he's been very
think he got
consistent
a
with a
little
lot of
bit
things.
broken over the lawsuit and stuff, honestly. So it's
I mean, who wouldn't?
that's why I'm like, you know what? I'm being too hard on the guy. I think that really broke him. The billion, couple billion dollars they say he owed for
Exactly.
misinformation, but yet they'll push us to fake wars with the misinformation.
Well, and all the COVID stuff, like where's it?
Thanks for watching Fight Back Podcast. If you like the show, like, subscribe, or share the video. There's also donation links in the descriptions. Why buy or sell a gun from a company that hates you and your values when you can support free speech and the podcast by going to armslist.com to buy, sell, trade all firearms and accessories. To get the discount, go to armslist.com and put in promo code FIGHTBACK, and it'll be only $1 the first month.
But
You
anyways,
ruined our country.
so I had a huge following of people, and so probably about 3 4 months before I actually even did the story, I had thousands and thousands of messages from people saying, "Hey, cover Pizzagate, talk about Pizzagate, investigate this thing." And I kind of looked at it and kind of looked into what is this thing, and I'm like, you know what, honestly, this is nuts. This is not real. So I just stayed away from it.
That's what I thought too.
Hillary Clinton's eating children in the basement of a pizza parlor, like
She that's just
blood
nonsense.
sacrifices. Like, this is nonsense.
That's what I
Crazy.
thought.
So I just ignored it, stayed away from it. Tons of people, I'm telling you,
They
and
stopped hitting you up.
all the way from probably, August, September, all the way until the end of the year, like just constantly, please, please, please. Then I'm working at CBS again at the time, have a very successful segment there we did called Reality Check, which we had brought over from Ohio in Cincinnati. And we were doing that. And that thing was doing, I think we did 150 million video views in just 2016 of that segment, right? It was incredibly successful. And yet we get to this story around this Pizzagate thing. I had not covered it, and I'm working at CBS, and then one night we do a story. Because the way that a lot of stations will get their stories right is you have something called a news feed. So it comes from the Associated Press or Reuters or a combination.
They'll kind of send you what they want to cover.
CNN. Well, they're not necessarily what they want you to cover, just they make stories available to you. So you're paying for a news
Yes,
service.
they give you options and you pick what you
Options.
want.
And they're covering lots of stuff and you're paying for the service. And so CNN and AP were covering a guy who went into a pizza place with a rifle called Comet Ping Pong Pizza, who shot up the place. And it was all because of a crazy online conspiracy theory called Pizzagate. Then CNN reported that this Pizzagate theory was originally propagated by, go back and look it up. This is not made up. It was propagated by Macedonian sheep farmers who were attempting to destroy her reputation before the election.
Who posted this?
CNN.
CNN.
This is a CNN story. You can still find it in the archives.
Oh, that's awesome. I gotta look this up.
Macedonian sheep farmers
Go
were the
find that and post it.
original creators of Pizzagate.
Wait, real quick. What did the guy shoot that came in? How many people did he shoot when he went to shoot at the pizza parlor?
Nobody. Originally, they said he shot up in the air.
Yeah.
Then when you look into the actual police reports, he shot a computer.
Shot a computer.
They destroyed the hard drive.
Yeah. Destroyed the hard drive of a computer.
Of all the things you would shoot, I want to see those kids. Bam, let me take out the computer.
I think he was shot by police afterwards.
He was not shot. No, no, no. No, it was actually, it was even worse. It would have been better if he'd been shot. Just kidding. instead, he was charged. And then in order to not serve jail time, he had to come out and basically apologize and blame the fact that people had talked about this online as the reason it drove him to this insanity. And therefore, he was apologizing for what online provocateurs and crazy people, conspiracy theorists, had done to him.
So he had to teach us a lesson.
Yes.
Interesting.
Say, if you talk about this, you're part of the problem.
Yes. So he shot the server and then he goes and gives an apology.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
To not get jail time.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, oh, so he didn't even get jail time. So it's almost like, almost would seem like someone could have sent him in there to do that. But that would be a crazy conspiracy.
Just saying.
Didn't even get jail time. Like, he had a deal worked out.
Yeah, exactly. He got a deal. So, and then again, the trade was to say.
That's crazy. Not so crazy. Jail time, because you know, like, how they want to just completely destroy everyone. It's almost like a deal was made. Anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So because we did that, and so I, I'm anchoring the CBS in Atlanta, and I'm reading this story on air. So the way the stories are written, when they come down from AP, they write them.
So they just send you the story and you just read it real quick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, a producer is just going to copy and paste.
And they just send you the story and you're kind of like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're just going to read what they put up. And then CNN, I guess, had done this also. And then one night I'm reading on air about the Macedonian sheep farmers. And I'm like, okay, this is
that
crazy.
Sounds, yeah, that's
crazier than what people are saying.
That page isn't the cannibalizing kids.
Yeah. There's no way Macedonian, what?
That's just
so. Then I said, "Okay, I'm going to look into it," and so I started researching it. Started going on. I put up a couple posts saying, "Okay, you know, online people, I'm going to start looking at this thing. Send me what you got. Mm-hmm. Craziest stuff."
Yeah, thinking, all right, this is going to be stupid.
Yep, let me see it all, because I know it's probably not that Hillary Clinton's eating children. And by the way, she was. I do not believe that part of the part.
Not Hillary Clinton.
No. But, well, and then all the with the Epstein cookie. Stuff now, who knows? It's actually gotten weirder.
Jerky. Yeah.
But it was like.
Tied Epstein's into this after.
Exactly.
So
let me see what you got. We'll start, you know, looking at it. And the first thing I found was that Pizzagate, of course, did not come from Macedonian sheep farmers. So as a journalist, one of the first things you want to do is you want to source. Where's this original source of this coming from? And that was pretty easy to find. And people know it now. But at the time, no one had reported on this.
Mm-hmm.
I was the first person to report on the fact that it came not from the Macedonian sheep farmers, but from John Podesta's emails that were.
Oh, so that wasn't known at the time, because that's common knowledge now.
Yeah, everyone knows it now.
Wow.
Yeah. No one had talked about the fact that these came from his emails or the fact that it came from his emails.
These are 100%. We know these are true. These are his emails. John Podesta was the campaign manager.
He was the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton. Yeah.
And he's one of the most powerful people in D.C.
Yeah, he and his brother Tony.
Yeah.
So they're both D.C. lobbyists and extremely powerful, extremely well-connected guys. So it originally started with his emails being hacked. Now, what I've actually heard, too, is that it wasn't that they were hacked. It was that he left his phone in a cab in New York. And that someone who got a hold of that phone passed it to someone who passed some. Eventually, it got to WikiLeaks. Mm-hmm. And WikiLeaks, when they saw it, took the contents of his entire email box. They dumped him online and they dropped 50,000 emails online. That's where it originates from.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that John Podesta is a pedophile.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not saying that. Saying, where did the Pizzagate story come from? That's where it came from.
Yeah.
First. Then you say, okay, so then how do we get to pedophile stuff?
From emails. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's just emails. He never talks about molesting children. Well, what you find is that it was actually self-proclaimed pedophiles on 4chan and 8chan who were the ones who first alerted.
Oh, that's who first. Because I was wondering who went and deciphered because pizza is code word for pedophile. The pedophiles used it. Actual pedophiles went through it and noticed that?
Pedophiles who noticed it started talking about it on chat rooms on 4chan and 8chan, and what they said was, has anybody noticed that in the emails that WikiLeaks put out for John Podesta, that he's using the language we use? Now, I would also say this. In 2016, virtually no one in the, or 20, let's say 2015, mm-hmm. virtually no one in America, the average person, had ever heard that cheese pizza was code language for child pornography.
No.
Right, people just did not know
heard that until Pizzagate. Yeah,
yeah.
Unless you're a pedophile,
unless you're a pedophile. But pedophiles do use that language.
So that makes sense that they would have been the ones.
And they were the ones who alerted it. So then the next thing I did was, okay, so now you got two. If you're tracing this journalistically, you'd say, okay, well, now I know where it came from. It did not come from here. It did come from here.
That's
how did we get
difference.
To the pedophile stuff? It did not come from here, but it came from here. So then the next question is, so is that true? Because I didn't know if that was true.
It's important to check that, yeah. Right.
So next thing I did was went in some chat rooms, 4chan, 8chan, looking for pedophiles. Is this true? Is this language you use? Is this how you communicate? And 100% of them are saying.
It's sick that you can go in these forums and the pedophiles have these chats, by the way.
Well, and they would be much harder to find now. Again, it's weird to say this, right? Because you would think it's 2026. That was 2016. 10 years? 10 years is a long time in technology. Yeah. If you just think about the fact that in 2016, Instagram did not have video.
Yeah.
YouTube had blown up, but it was not near what it even is right now. Facebook, the first year of Facebook video was 2015.
Wow.
Right? So even just in terms of online, the online world was very different than it is even today. And chat rooms, obviously, you can go back even 10 years before that. So you go 2016, 2006.
And it's really,
Yeah. That's how people communicated online, was primarily on forums and chat rooms.
Yeah.
No one's on forums anymore, right? That's very rare that you find
these right. Forums. I just remember we used to be like in forums, like when I was in fighting, I go to like the fight forums to see what people are talking about. I haven't been there in years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just not how people really communicate.
I forgot all about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so these guys would be on their forums. This is how they you know, hide and talk about stuff. But they, of course, they all talk in code language.
Yeah.
Right?
Because you can't talk about little boys. So the cheese pizza, hot dogs, I think.
Hot dog was little boy. Well, cheese pizza is just child pornography in general. Mm. And then you have pizza slice is a girl, hot dog is a boy, pasta. There's all these different
ice cream ones that was used a lot in the Epstein
files.
They were definitely using it for code, but I don't know.
Yeah. So we'll get to that part.
Yeah.
Because it does morph a little bit.
If we want to get through this, then tie into that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then when you find that, okay. So then that all makes sense. Again, correlation does not equal causation.
Yeah.
Just because it is true that pedophiles talk this way, it is true they use this language, does not mean that John Podesta is using the language they're using in the way they're using it.
But he was definitely using it for code, for sure.
He certainly looks that way.
Apps and all kinds
of
weird. Where recently I went through the Epstein files form, but we'll do that later. But there's all kinds of, I don't know exactly where John Podesta uses it, but he uses it lots of weird ways, right? Because I haven't really actually gone through those emails.
Lots of weird conversations about pizza, lots of weird conversations with different people. And one of the people who's involved in those conversations is a guy named James Elefantis who owns a pizza place. Would not be unusual for a guy who owns a pizza place to have emails about pizza. Would not be weird at all.
No, that wouldn't be weird at all.
It's the quantity of emails going back and forth to him.
And how they're used.
It is also the fact that Elefantis was named, and we talked about this in the original report, as one of the 50 most powerful people in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Now you're like, well, that stood out to me. Because
he's a pizza place owner.
Does he do anything in a strip mall?
But you know, it'll give you power.
Yeah.
If you had little boys and little girls,
if you're connected to those powerful people in ways that feed certain appetites. Not saying he is, but I'm just saying that would give you power.
Lindsey,
that would make you powerful.
Lindsey Graham would love him.
Yeah, you would think.
Allegedly.
Yeah, I think that's where you start to see in a city with a president and an entire administration and all these members of Congress and members of the
this Senate, guy is powerful. Yeah,
he's one of the 50 most powerful people. A guy who owns a single pizza place. That doesn't make sense at all. No. So there's a lot of just weirdness. And then the other thing, which we do not go into in the actual report you saw,
yeah.
Go back and watch that original report. You will not see that there was. The fact that we had gone through, because people were sending stuff, James Elefantis' Instagram at the time.
This is where it gets weird.
And it's weird.
Really weird and dark.
And we do not put any of that on TV.
So you didn't even post that. This stuff is crazy. Like, I don't even know how to, talking about, kill rooms, torture rooms. Mm-hmm. Like, put pictures of little kids looking tied up. Just the most sick.
He has a picture of a little girl on a ping pong table with her wrists taped down, and she's smiling. And it's some little, you know, I don't remember what the caption was. He explained it later and said it was a family friend. It was a child of some family friends, whatever. Okay.
Look at the comment section, right?
It's super bizarre. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. All the people are like just weird, tons of weird comments on all these kid things. Sorry to cut you off,
No,
but I always think just the comments freak me out when I see those.
well, and he had a picture of like a little.
Imagine if it was your like little cousin and a bunch of your friends were making weird like sexual jokes about it. Like, no, that wouldn't be cool.
If it's a family friend, so you've got these friends, they have a little daughter, and you said, you know what would be funny? Let's do a picture of her with her wrist taped down to a table. Who thinks this is funny? Now, it doesn't make you a pedophile.
Yeah.
But it certainly makes you have a bizarre sense of humor and a perverse sense of humor to find humor in this to post publicly. And I think what you would see is a pattern within his posts on Instagram.
Yeah, I think it goes, I haven't done research into this, but I believe it expands without within his, lots of the people that were posting on Instagram and stuff had very similar types of stuff.
That is correct. Very similar types of stuff.
So you look at patterns.
You look at patterns and you look I believe at one point Elefantis even closed his Instagram because he was getting so much heat.
Yeah.
And he changed his profile picture and he changed it to a statue of a Greek god who represented child love. Right? So it's almost like you're trolling people at that point.
Can't make this shit up.
Yeah.
I think it's also really important. The sign of the pizza thing. I think you covered this in the thing.
We did talk about that.
It literally means it's like a pedophile sign.
It's boy love.
That same sign is on Voodoo Donuts at, they might have changed it up in Oregon.
Really?
Portland. And I think there's been some other things mentioned weird about this spot. I don't know enough about it to get into detail, but I remember seeing that there and it kind of freaked me out because it was after the Pizzagate thing. It was still up. I think they took it down now.
Yeah, so we talked about the symbols because the FBI had, going all the way back to like 2007, they had a list of symbols that they would look for.
Yeah.
And we talk about the fact that bands who would perform at Comic Ping Pong Pizza, a couple of those bands have songs where they talk about pedophilia. See, and they have the child.
It's so many coincidences. You could argue maybe they wrongly put the thing up or like maybe made a joke, but bring in bands that joke about pedophilia on top of it. No.
Yeah. That's in their music videos, the drummer has like, he has the triangle inside the triangle. It's the same boy love symbol. Because again, even within pedophilic circles, you have different symbols and words for different things. It's not just one thing. It's easy for us to talk about pedophilia.
It's a jerk trained to weird to different. They're into weird. To them, it's different. To us, we're like, oh, they're all sick and, right. But they might like little boys, little girls, whatever they're into.
Right. Exactly. So there's a lot to it. Michael Tracy, we'll talk about him throughout this thing. I'm not going to bash Michael at all. I think he's a stand-up guy to come and...
I don't agree with him on his position, but you know what? I don't hate the guy, so I'm not going to bash him.
I don't either.
Again, position's wrong, but like...
Yeah, we did an interview. He came and talked about it, and I think he actually articulated his point pretty well.
He's an intelligent guy, yeah.
He is. He's a smart guy. He's too smart to not believe this stuff, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
But I think he's a contrarian.
Being paid.
He's
some people want to argue that. Yeah. It, yeah.
I think he is. I think Michael looks for where everyone's going, he wants to go in a different direction, which I respect, except for the fact that there's too much evidence.
But this is just too serious. That's the thing. Which is real quick, back to the bands. Imagine if you had a business and a band started doing pedophile stuff. What would you do? I would kick them the fuck out. Okay, get the fuck out of here.
If you didn't know, maybe you didn't know it was pedophile stuff, except for the fact that the symbol on their drum is the same one on your logo outside.
But I'm not sure if this is kind of true, but I saw a video and it was showing one of those bands and they were like talking about it. Again, I don't know.
After the fact.
I can't say for sure if that was like accurate, but they were talking about weird, again, I don't remember the details, but weird pedophile stuff at one of their shows. There's only like a few people there.
Oh, no, they that is true. Yes.
See that?
There were two bands and one of them was called Sex Stains. I can't remember the name of the other one. Sex Stains and something else. But yeah, they talk about it very openly. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it seemed from what I saw, Pythagoras, yeah, there was openly pedophiles.
Yeah. And you have to remember that within...
In DC.
Within the pedophile world, I would assume, they don't see themselves as being...
Evil?
Evil.
I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe they get up. Maybe that's why they use the demon... Maybe some do,
some do and some don't. Let's put it that way. Some do and some
probably don't. You're probably right. Because I've heard like these people trying to call it like, oh, we're MAPS, minor attracted person, and trying to normalize it. Right. There's people on the right being like, oh, pedophilia isn't actually gay marriage. I'm like, you guys are retarded. And then a few years later, I go, wow, they are trying to.
So what I would describe it as, and this is true of the Epstein stuff as well, right? I keep trying to make this explanation to people because I think it's the easiest way to understand it. Is imagine you have like these rings, right?
Yeah.
That kind of... ascend. So we'll use Epstein as an example because that's an example a lot of people can be most familiar with right now.
Everyone knows him, yeah.
So you have Epstein and you have this circle of people who know him. And we'll call that the Epstein files, right? you know, 3 million documents that get dumped, about 3 million more that are still not released. But within those 3 million documents, you have thousands and thousands of people who have had contact with him. And actually, in his case, a lot of them are him contacting them from his, you know,
he was really looking out for this
vacation account, or Jay Epstein vacations or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But he's talking to
thousands of people, yeah. Because he was trying to network and connect with everyone. He was amazing at that. I'll give him piece of shit, but great at networking and connecting all the different worlds, celebrities, business, science.
This was his full-time job. His full-time existence was connecting with people.
Yeah.
And so, and to your point, he does it remarkably well.
That's probably why he was put in that position.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was able to do that. And I would agree with when Trump says, you know, there are a lot of people who are in this circle who are going to get hurt if their names are in it, because they're not pedophiles.
Well, I'm sure he has tons of people that haven't done bad things.
Sure.
It's not fair, but a lot of people have done bad things.
If Jeffrey Epstein emails you, you're bad.
Oh, yeah. Obviously not.
Right. Well, you say obviously not, but there are a lot of people who were just like, if your name's in the files.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's no, I agree. It's unfair that people are doing that. You have to look at it and see what context they're in there. How is he, you know, how close are they? How many times, you know?
And is it them communicating with him or is it him messaging them?
Exactly.
Right? Because he can be sending emails to all these people.
Yeah.
And he can be trying to have some level of conversation. And maybe the person was like, you know, hey, I want to invite you to this celebrity thing I'm doing. And they're like, sure, I'll go.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're going to walk in and there's a plate full of children.
Little kid, yeah. You know?
So you have that as the widest circle. Then I think from there, you have a smaller circle of people, right? And that smaller circle of people would represent people with whom Jeffrey Epstein would have communication, and then they would communicate back, and there seemed to be a lot of kind of business and
sending torture videos back and forth, that type of stuff.
Not even that one. Yeah. I would say this one's just...
Oh, yeah,
just
the level out with that, yeah.
Yeah, where they're in kind of
the inner circle, but like connection with them, yeah.
Then I'd say there's a smaller circle above that, where you would have people who are... They are connected in terms of, hey, you like girls? Yeah, absolutely. Well, I got these girls, and maybe they're just barely
underage. A lot of it was girls like, you know, 17, 16. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey seemed to like them younger, like, you know, 13, 14. Yeah. So he liked them, but he kept a lot of 16, 17-year-old girls that probably also could pass at like 18, just because men's weakness is hot girls.
Right.
So if you have lots of girls around, especially he wanted ones I think could like pretend like they're 18, get them to sleep with them. Yeah. Then, oh, you just
they were 16. Yeah. Exactly. I think there's a lot of that. And I think that circle is it's smaller than obviously the other two, but it's not a circle of pedophiles per se.
No, because it's not going to freak people out to be like, oh, look at these attractive girls if you don't tell them, you know, their age. So that circle is probably much larger.
And in some cases, you may be lying to them and saying, no, don't worry, these girls are...
They're 18. Yeah.
Okay. And these are people who go to the island, and there's people who are... Listen, anybody who's going to the island, and there are people who have pretended they've gone and...
They're going for...
I didn't see anything. You're going there for one reason.
They're going. That's why all these guys are constantly trying to go there.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think from that level up, there's another one. Right? That's the smallest one.
Yeah.
And that's the circle that I would say is where there is young children and there is satanic ritualistic abuse.
Yeah, I would have thought this was crazy a few years ago, but the more I've looked into it, the more it seems likely to be real, the satanic. So one of those things I thought, like, possibly, I mean, looking at your old thing, Pizzagate, and then I did a little more research after that, thought a possibility. But then the more I started looking, like the Franklin scandal, there's one, is it Detroit, whatever, like in Belgium, the Finders cult, you start being like, oh my God, it's real.
It's real. It's not a huge group. So again, the mistake would be to say, well, that small circle that's ritualistic.
Bigger group is just for lots of men's weakness of girls. That's an easy one to get a big group with.
It's easy.
You know?
Those people do not translate into the top circle, but that doesn't mean the top circle doesn't exist. So the top circle exists, the where people are getting, I think, intentionally thrown off is to say, so if you believe in that, then you believe that all these people are involved in that.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to force you
to be like, oh, it's too big to be possible, because it's just so dark and evil and disgusting. It's hard to imagine it's true that you could organize a group of people to do this. But the more I've researched, the more it seems, well, there's that case in Belgium, is it Detroit, I think, where there's where there's like 8 bodies, there's rest. I think like 20 people were
Oh.
killed. It was up to the highest level of the governments, but they pinned it on a guy on welfare that had 12 homes with dungeons and stuff in it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
Yeah, I don't know this
when I looked
place.
at that case, that's when I go, oh
Yeah.
my God, it's all real. And they were doing these satanic rituals, and it went to the highest level of government.
Yeah.
The police department was in on it. It'd take a couple hours, but like I went down that rabbit hole one
Yeah.
night and I was just like sick and had to like stop looking at this story after spending a night researching it to try
You
to do
said the
this.
police department was in on it.
Because yeah, they went there because someone called the police because they hear girls screaming. They heard the girls screaming and the police like left and the guy's like, what are you doing? And there's like, no, that's like a cat or something, and just like left. And there was girls in the basement that later got killed that were being tortured.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
And the girls that did survive said they were like, all the elites were there. They had DNA of like 20 men. That
Yeah.
was they moved a judge and he wouldn't test the DNA that they had.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's insane. You have to like
I
do
gotta look
a
into it. I gotta
yeah
look into
yeah
it.
you should do a segment on it. It's like it's crazy.
What year was it, do you know?
80s, 90s, maybe, maybe a little more recent, probably 90s, but it was a huge deal. Like in Belgium, it was like the biggest protest that they've ever had because the people knew, they kept killing people.
Yeah.
People would die mysteriously. I think it was like 20 people.
That's crazy.
It's the craziest story out of all of them,
Holy
more than
cow.
like Finders Gold. Once I saw that, I'm like, oh my God, this is all real.
Yeah.
But like the pattern of death, like you said, you looked into Franklin scandal.
Yeah. Franklin scandals is a crazy one. BBC, no, excuse me, Discovery had tried to do a documentary on the Franklin scandal. They had it all ready to go, and then it got killed at the last second. Never got released, but
Wow.
someone took the unfinished version and put it up on YouTube.
So is that online?
It was
Let's
as of a
figure
few
that out.
years ago.
Yeah,
You should check it out. It's really well done.
look how heavy the media goes and shuts these stories down. That should tell you something. And
Oh,
like, oh, you
absolutely.
got fired pretty much after you covered Pizzagate. I think
Yeah.
that's actually really important to this. You were the most popular news anchor by far in your area. You said initially they didn't fire you, they just what took your social media?
Yeah, so we were growing at a rate at the time of 11,000 people a day
Wow.
before Pizzagate.
That's big.
Before Pizzagate. And then with
So
Pizzagate,
you're becoming a star.
yeah, we were, and I was a very dangerous person because I was not following script, and we were talking about the Syrian Civil War at the time and all the lies that were being perpetrated around that. And when we hit the Pizzagate thing, they used that as their excuse, and they were like, basically, like, look, we're going to fire you, or you can take down all your social media.
But that's where you're getting way more views, correct?
And that was the first time that I realized, like, the power of what the online world was doing, because it was like, wait a minute.
It's all
So
your power.
I'm still going to be your anchor? Yes. So my face stays on billboards? Yes, but I can't be on Facebook. Correct. Can't be on YouTube. Correct. So they basically, sh we shut it all down for a year. I had, again, family, 5 kids, my wife. I was like,
Hey, yeah, you made money.
I'm not going to burn everything down for this. For what? So I can be fired for a story that's already out there, which is still on YouTube to this day. So I said, okay. So I just kept my mouth shut and just did the local thing for a year. And then I had an opportunity with some guys when 2017, when crypto was going crazy. Dash, which was a crypto at the time, had a marketing budget and knew some guys from that. And we submitted a proposal to come back independently, being funded with that. It got passed. I went back to my bosses and said, look, you guys are actually violating my contract, right?
Yeah.
My contract had, I had the right to do
Social
what I was
media.
doing. And they were like, well, can you tell you what? We'll think about it. And so I left the building and they called me in the car and said, you're fired. And
This shows you they don't want to expose the pedophiles. They want to all the fact checkers. It was like the fact checkers all said Pizzagate's false. A couple of these guys were later convicted of like sex crimes with minors.
Yeah. Well, what's fascinating too is when the response when that story broke, right? I think overnight, and this is again, this is 10 years ago, this would happen much faster today. Even 10 years ago, people weren't consuming as much news online. We did 3 million views in 12 hours on the Pizzagate story when it broke.
Yeah, I saw it. I didn't follow much news at the time. I remember that was my introduction to it. And I was just like, whoa, this is because I had heard Pizzagate, I think. I thought it was some just crazy
Yeah.
stuff. And I saw that and I'm like, oh, this, like,
Yeah.
I should look into this a little more.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it blew up. We had calls from Washington, D.C. the next day. We had calls from lobbyists. We had calls from CBS Network. CBS Network did not even own our station. And they were calling,
So
saying,
that makes
take
total
them off the
sense.
air.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So they have no connection to
How
you.
can you put this on
And
TV?
why are they able to tell you what you can put on? They can
Well,
lie about weapons of mass destruction.
exactly. And even more so than that, think about this. The same guys who were saying, take it off the air, were allowing us to talk about Pizzagate when it was a guy walking in with a gun.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that Pizzagate was not allowed to be talked about. I didn't do it till they did it first. They talked about it first. But then as soon as we said, well, wait a minute, you talked about Pizzagate, so you opened the door to talk about this. Can we actually talk about what it really is? Nope, can't do that.
Nope.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
The other thing was interesting.
The power of these media companies and the control they have. It's like, you were in it. It's important. Like, literally got fired for the most popular story. Like, that story was insanely. Your local news, it's probably pretty rare for a local segment just to go completely viral around the world.
I would say that I was the only guy who ever really did that.
And that story still pops up.
It does.
Like, that's, I think I saw it recently, like on Twitter, someone had posted.
Well, it's
it,
all over. Like, it's all over X. Like, everyone's been reposting. It's still on. It's been on YouTube for 10 years.
Like,
where people would watch it.
Yeah. It's like huge, and you got fired for covering and everything that's true. Did they say anything you covered wrong?
One single thing in that story has ever been so. John Podesta will say that it's been that Pizzagate in general has been debunked. Yeah. Somebody show it to me.
Yeah.
There's never been one fact in there that's been debunked.
Did they even talk about you making any mistakes and when they fire you, or they're just kind of like, fired?
So the interesting
thing was, did you ask, like, why am I in trouble if nothing's wrong?
Well, what they said was, the first thing they said was, you did not have permission to put it on the air. And I said, actually, I did. Not only did I have our executive producer sign off on the story, I actually took it a level above him. I took it to our news director, who was the highest ranking journalist in the station, and said, I won't run it till you sign off on it. And he read through the script, he watched everything, and he said, I don't know how we wouldn't do this story inside.
Yeah, so it was most of the people in there shows are good, honest people, but there's a few at the top, kind of like with Epstein's trial. I can't remember who it was, the DA or whatever. So if someone above him came in and said, basically, hey, you can't really do anything to this guy. He's a
prosecutor. Yeah, that was the prosecutor on Epstein's original trial.
So there's this level of people at the very top that steps in, you know, like how Trump won't release the Epstein files.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think when that finally happened, it was like, again, okay, so we'll just, you know, let everything be quiet. But nothing's been debunked about it. I was quiet about it. I remember a friend of mine. So when I originally did the story, my wife and I were in total disagreement about whether or not to do the story. Because she
didn't want to do it.
Don't do the story.
Women always want to play the safer role. Yeah. I mean, I think.
She's like, it's too dangerous.
You can't blame them for it. No. They have the kids. It's just they're always going to try to convince you to take the safer
role. That natural instinct is. And the other thing was, I was always blowing stuff up because I would talk about stuff I was supposed to talk about. And she's like, just like,
that's totally understandable. You can't blame her for that. It's like, she has the kids, the safety, but it's like, you as a man, you want to, like, well, some guys don't have that, but you feel like you have to push the boundaries and tell the truth.
Right. And again, I was like, you know, we went back and forth on it. She said no. I said yes. I said, tell you what, we called our pastors who had been our friends for a decade, who were in Ohio. I said, you know, let's call them. Let's ask them to read through this. I sent them the script and said, what do you guys think? And let's agree, because we had taken counsel from them in a lot of areas of our lives. And I said, if they say yes, and these people were different than a lot of pastors in that he had been a VP for Procter & Gamble at one point, too.
Oh, wow.
So he was extremely successful financially in the business
world. He entered the business world, too, yeah.
Yes. So it wasn't just like, you know, a guy who had never done that, you know. And so we said, we're going to trust them. And so she agreed. And they read through it and they said, we don't see how you couldn't, like, you can't not tell this story.
No, it's too important. Were they a little worried of backlash though? Were you?
They didn't know. Nobody knew what the backlash would be. That's why I tried to be as careful as I could getting all these sign-offs on it. And so then when everything got shut down and then I was like, okay, I'll just, you know, I'll take my medicine and keep my mouth shut. I remember he had reached out to me and he said, listen, I had no idea this would happen. I'm really sorry.
He apologized for getting you in trouble. Yeah.
But he said, but I do believe this. He says, I believe you will be vindicated. Right. And
believe you have been vindicated.
Yeah. 10 years later, Epstein files come out. And what do you find in the Epstein files? 911 references to pizza in those emails. And it's like, and they're talking about all kinds of
bizarre
stuff.
The most interesting thing we were talking before this, that's so interesting about those pizza mentions.
Yeah.
After Pizzagate went public, they mostly all stopped talking about pizza.
Yeah.
So it shows you, oh, we can't use pizza as a code anymore. That to me, it's the same year as they were talking about it. Then this hits, they stopped using it as a code word.
Yeah.
That's massive.
2013, 2014, 2015, the majority of Epstein's emails that talk about pizza are in those years.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's
same
huge.
Years that that Podesta's emails are done as well. That it seemed to be, it fits with that, right? And by the way, there's also, and I've been mocked a little bit by certain people for even bringing this up, but I brought it up in the original story, which is if you go back to 2010, there's a 2010 entry into Urban Dictionary, if you look up cheese pizza, where they refer to it as code language used by pedophiles.
Yeah.
And that's 2010. That's 6 years before Pizzagate.
Yeah.
Right? And people will be like, oh, well, that's Urban Dictionary. What does that mean? Well, why would it be there at all?
Yeah, like, I don't know. It's obviously, someone put it there for a reason.
Yeah, and it's there for a reason.
And they're using this clearly as a code word. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not going to be all of the uses. I went and looked at pizza. A few of them sound like it'd be normal, but lots of them don't.
Lots of them don't. And here's the other thing. And by the way, none of them are a receipt for a pizza.
Yeah. Well, also, pizza and grape soda. Yep. Or no, is it hot dogs and grape soda?
No, it's pizza and grape soda.
And they use those together.
They do, and that was new.
Who drinks grape soda?
Well, I like pizza.
You're like, well, okay, but it just seems like weird, like that those words are always used together, pizza and grape soda.
Well, and it's interesting. What's more interesting to me in the way that it's talked about in the Epstein files is it's the fiending for it.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you desperate for pizza?
Yes. And they're like, they're obsessed with like pizza, like, and other things like ice cream, like flying ice. Like they're talking about how they can get the ice cream to like Paris and like.
Well, and they do that with the other one is beef jerky.
Yeah.
So this was not necessarily in the Podesta email.
Yeah.
Right. But in the Epstein emails, there's all these references to beef jerky. And it appears.
Keeping it refrigerated, like weird stuff. Like,
well, that's super weird, right?
Because jerky, you don't keep refrigerated.
The whole point of jerky is you don't refrigerate.
Yeah.
And they talk about the fact that he keeps it in a freezer. It says he has enough in his freezer to last him 6 weeks, but he's desperately trying to get more there. And then there's an email where someone is really upset because someone who was supposed to bring the jerky didn't bring the jerky, and how Epstein's losing his mind because he hasn't had your jerky.
Yeah, you don't like obsess over jerky and pizza like that.
They're like, if you weren't going to come, you could have told me so I could have had it picked up and brought here, because he doesn't have his jerky. He's losing his mind.
Yeah, it just doesn't.
He's very upset. Yeah. And it's like, who gets very upset over beef jerky?
Yeah.
And if it's really beef jerky, it's like the most easily attainable food in the world. Every gas station in America has beef jerky in it.
No,
if you're on your island,
jerky,
you can get it ordered there. It does not have to be this specially curated jerky unless it's not actually.
There was a restaurant called Cannibal. I think
Cooks and Cannibal.
Yeah, they had some kind of connection to this. It's almost like they're like throwing your face, mocking you, like, oh, go eat at the restaurant Cannibal.
Well, yeah, Cooks and Cannibals, I think, it's kind of a well-known restaurant in New York. And I think they have one in D.C. as well, but I know it's in New York. It's a well-known restaurant, but they talk about having this special jerky recipe from someone who works there.
It seems a little weird.
Just seems weird.
It's like it's on your face. Now, that alone, you can be like, whatever, but when you just start seeing over and over weird patterns, if it's one by itself, but like you said, they're just everywhere.
Yeah. No, it is. And I think with the Epstein stuff that's interesting, too, is, again, there's all these references to pizza. And, you know, when I was talking to Michael Tracy, he had said, yeah, but who doesn't? You and I probably do, too. And I said, I'll tell you what.
Talking about real pizza.
If you search my inbox for pizza, I would bet you, other than Pizzagate references, I would bet you the only time you're going to find, you might find one, maybe two emails, and it might be like a receipt from a pizza place. Here's the fascinating thing.
Yeah.
There are no receipts from a pizza place. There's no actual pizza places listed ever.
Yeah, I'm going to search mine after, because I can't think of ever emailing about pizza. Now, maybe they're in there, but I can't think of any.
Out of thousands of emails, you might have a couple.
Yeah.
You're not going to have 900 conversations in your inbox about pizza.
With billionaires. Like, who really want this pizza.
Well, somebody made this point. It's not even my point. I think it's a fair one, though. They say it's also pretty bizarre that in the Epstein emails, these guys are billionaires and these powerful elites, and they're all talking about ice cream, grape soda, pizza, and jerky.
Yeah.
The cheapest foods. And it's the only food they're talking about. It's not like they're having conversations. Here's the thing. Again, context, right? It's not just the content. It's the context. The context of his emails don't make sense.
No.
If you say, well, maybe he's just like a foodie and he's always talking about food, but he's not always talking about
he's
food.
He's not talking about food or high-end food.
He's talking about this. Well,
here's something really interesting I saw in there. There was also the Wayfair. You remember, I thought it was ridiculous, overselling them. There were some Wayfair mentions. A lot of them were like receipts and stuff. The one that really got me, there was one, a delivery he got for Woody Allen on his birthday. And I believe Woody Allen and him both personally wrote about it. Billionaires don't like, they have assistants. They don't go like ask, hey, where is this? Isn't that cheap furniture too, I believe?
It is.
I don't think Wayfair's like.
Well, the reason the Wayfair scandal, if anyone doesn't know what that is, and I stayed away from it too because I thought this is too
Yeah, it just seemed absolutely
crazy.
insane. But after seeing an Epstein
It's
fire, it
crazy.
made me think like.
There were these pieces of furniture that started popping up on Wayfair's website, and the furniture would be the reason it stood out to people was because Wayfair is like famously cheap furniture. That's the whole point of it. It's affordable. Probably is the better term they would prefer us to use. Affordable furniture. For the everyday person. And you order it online. And the problem was you'd suddenly have like a cabinet and it would be like $36,000. And you're like, but it's still like a metal folding cabinet. So at first when it popped up, people started thinking that it was a mistake, right? But then they started finding like, and it was almost always like, it was never like a rug. It would always be like some kind of a storage cabinet or closet, portable closet or something, a trunk. And it would have this
Something you could say,
super
but
high price tag, 45, 50, $60,000, $36,000, on the website. And then they would use product names, and people started saying that the product names were matching missing children.
yeah, that's
Right?
bizarre.
Don't know if any of this is true, but
Yeah,
it
it
is
just seems
true.
too crazy to be true, but when you see these patterns and you see them in Epstein files, and I'm still not
And
saying
it
it's
is in
true, but it's worth looking into.
right, but it is in the Epstein files that he did order a piece of furniture from Wayfair for Woody Allen that was like
Yeah,
$26,000.
and he was tracking it. Woody Allen was tracking it.
Yes.
And I've been on these billionaires. They have their assistants do all this. They don't make
Yeah.
these calls and
Yeah.
emails and.
And why would Epstein be following up with the Wayfair department, like you said, to
Because
say,
Woody Allen was so excited about.
yes, and they wrote this thank you. It got here just in time. We really needed it. But you really needed what? See, and this is why I don't know if it's true or not, but it's totally bizarre. And it also, as someone said to me, but if that's the case, why would they be doing this with Wayfair furniture? Wouldn't they do something more high-end? I said, because, and I'm not saying it's true, but if you were going to do this, you would have to do it in this way because the people who shop at Wayfair will never buy a $26,000 cabinet. They'll never buy a $36,000 metal folding
All of a
cabinet.
sudden, it shows up with a kid. You just got a cabinet.
You're right.
Hey guys, I want to introduce you to one of our sponsors, Antelope Hill Publishing. Antelope Hill publishes books such as Culture of Critique by Dr. Kevin McDonald, who's someone I've interviewed on my show. He talks about the evolutionary strategy of the chosen people. So go to antelopehillpublishing.com and use promo code FIGHTBACK to support the podcast and get a discount. That's antelopehillpublishing.com and promo code FIGHTBACK.
Hey guys, I'm demonetized everywhere. So if you want to support me and the podcast, go to fightbackpodcast.com and you can buy some cool merch like the shirt I'm wearing now.
No, it seems too insane to be true. And I'm not even saying it is, but it's saying it's possibility, you
But
know.
the fact that it's in Epstein's
Well,
emails
people
is
don't really buy each other
wild.
furniture as like birthday presents. Like, I don't know, billionaires aren't buying each other like furniture. I've
Cheap
never seen anything like
cabinets.
that. Yeah.
Who buys a cabinet for
For
anyone
Woody
ever?
Allen. Yeah. No, they don't. I'd say I've never known anyone to do that.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem normal to me.
No, it's not normal at all. It's totally, totally bizarre, but it's in there.
No, it is. Like there's so much in the Epstein files. I feel like they deliberately made it hard to go through. So it's spent, like a week just going through them. There's just so much stuff, so
It
many
is.
different directions. But there's definitely a lot of weird stuff. He's def well, art. He's into that weird art with babies being killed. I think it's important we touch on the Pizzagate. If you haven't, most people watching have probably seen Pizzagate, but if you haven't, go and Google search what is it, John Podesta's art. Yeah, just look at
Well,
this.
and Tony Podesta's art. So John Podesta in his
Oh yeah,
campaign
Tony Podesta is the
picture,
one that had more of it, I think. Yeah, right.
right?
So look, Tony Podesta's art. Yeah.
John Podesta in his campaign office, Washington Post did a whole article on it, and it was totally weird because it's speaking of cannibals, it is a picture of a man eating another man. That was his in his campaign chair office for Hillary Clinton. He has a cannibalistic picture. Tony Podesta, his brother, is the one who has hanging in the foyer of his home. He has a gold headless
Yeah,
body.
like it's headless, like a dead body with head chopped off.
Right. And it's supposed to mimic the positions that Jeffrey Dahmer would put his victims in. That's what it's after. And it's hanging in the foyer of his home when you walk in. Listen, doesn't make you a pedophile, but it makes you
Makes you bizarre.
freaking nuts.
But the
You're
art
nuts if
collected
you
all this is bizarre, like artwork from like all the different artists. It was like looked like children's being kidnapped, molested, killed.
Little
Some of it
girls
was.
who are lined up and their bottoms are red where they've been spanked, and they all look like they're like eight,
And young, yeah, we're talking like young, like
like little kids,
or
those are
puberty,
teens.
pre-puberty girls, like, and just looking like, yeah, handcuffed, tied up, like.
But you know what's so interesting about that is that before, so Pizzagate, people can trash it I don't think so many people are anymore. Now they want to run away from it again.
Yeah.
For a little while, they wanted to trash it. But even if you were one of those people who wanted to trash it, a journalist who wanted to trash it, and you, let's say you weren't on The Take, which most of them were, even if that's the case, go back and look at like the Tony Podesta artwork was written about in a Washington Post feature, like lifestyle article. And they describe all these different paintings he has. And the paintings he has, and again, the artists, you can like look up the artists and like go find out about them.
Like molesting kids and stuff.
Yeah, they were famous for creating artwork that sexualizes small children and it shows these confidence.
Yeah, not even talking like 16. We're talking about like 7.
We're talking 10 and under.
Yeah.
Right? 10 and under. And it would be, and a lot of it was things like, again, but where a child is like either naked or has been recently spanked. And so they would paint them with like a red bottom. And this is what these artists were doing.
Yeah.
And then you're selling it to these rich people and they have it in their homes. And so the Washington Post did not write an article saying, hey, this guy's a freak. This guy's so weird. We went in to cover his artwork, and it turns out he seems to have a penchant for little girls who have been
for girls between 7 and 9.
Yeah. What a weirdo he is. And he likes cannibalism, or he likes Jeffrey Dahmer. What a weirdo he is. They don't say that. Instead, it's an article about all this incredible artwork he has. You know what Pizzagate did? Pizzagate, like it or not, said, hey, by the way, these guys, this is what they do. This weird, creepy, you know, stuff, even if they're not child molesters themselves, they are in a world that celebrates it and likes it.
Yeah, it just shows that art's normal, that he can keep that stuff in his house. Like, I couldn't imagine walking in someone's house and seeing that. I would leave. There's no way I would, like, stick around if I saw, like, kids tied up. There's these other ones of, like, this, it's like a monster over a kid in a bed.
And like little stick figures on either side of them watching as children, watching the child who's on the bed, who's being raped.
Yeah.
Like, and imagine
these are the stories you get in the satanic rituals too. It's like making kids watch other kids be harmed.
Mm-hmm. It's a big part of it. But going back to what you just said, if you walked into someone's house and you walked in and they had, even if they weren't children, they just had pictures and paintings depicting rape on the wall.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you be like, oh, no, this is not for me.
Get out of here.
Yeah. There's
kids are really panic. Yeah.
But if you saw it with children, you'd be like, not only am I leaving, I'm going to call the police on the way out.
Yeah. No,
which,
exactly.
By the way, to bring it full circle, it was the whole point of the Pizzagate story I did. We didn't say anyone's a child molester. We didn't say anybody is a pedophile or running a pedophile ring. What we said is, with all this information that's out there, not one single investigation has actually taken place.
See, that's crazy. Still to this day, correct?
Still to this day.
They won't investigate it.
No.
Because it's just a crazy quack.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's been debunked by the pedophiles.
Mm-hmm. According to Hillary Clinton, just a couple weeks ago when she was being deposed for the Epstein stuff, she was asked, I think, by Lauren Boebert or Nancy Mace, one of them asked her specifically about Pizzagate, and she said it's a disgusting conspiracy.
Yeah, she got all angry.
Yeah, she got all fired up.
Well, this is also, also in the WikiLeaks thing. It's not exactly the same, but there's the weird stuff like the Marina Abramovich. Mm-hmm. She's like a witch who does like spirit cooking when they're mixing blood and semen for like these weird satanic or witchcraft. Like, I think she was openly a witch. So these elites are going to meeting with her doing this weird.
Well, it's all considered art, though. See, everything they do, and this is where they do
cannibalism art, too.
She does, too. In fact, there's a famous event that she's at where Lady Gaga is there with her, and there's a person who's posed as a dead body, and everyone in the room is eating off of this dead body because it's supposed to represent cannibalism, right? Marina Abramovich was very connected to the Podestas, very connected in those circles. Here's a fascinating bridge. So she was kind of the center because of all that spirit cooking stuff. There's emails back and forth where she's asking the Podestas, John Podesta, if he and Tony are coming to the spirit cooking thing that she's holding. Again, it's all supposed to be art, right? Oh, this is just art. We mimic semen and blood and drinking it. And that's like a scene from the movie Ted where he's like squirting himself with the lotion. It's like, what is this? This is like, again, normal people.
Yeah,
don't participate. But that's because normal people aren't cultured like they are.
No, we're just not cultured yet. Right? But we don't mix our semen and blood and then drink it.
And drink it, yeah.
And summon Satan.
Yeah, doing. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen like one of the things it's online. One of the spirit cooking art performances she has. She's on a stage and these men are approaching her and they're like ejaculating into her mouth and going past. I don't know if they're actually doing it or if it's just symbolism, but either way, this is it. They're like either new way, walking past her and she's just swallowing one after the other. It's like, this is art.
Yeah.
Okay.
Art. And then
so she is actually connected though to Epstein.
Really? I didn't know that.
And to Zelensky. So one thing that we have found is that Volodymyr Zelensky, the little tyrant who runs Ukraine and won't get out of office, was very close to Jeffrey Epstein. In fact, there's a whole bunch of new images that have come out where they met regularly.
Really?
Yeah, had very close connection. There's accusation that Epstein was working with... He was very excited in 2014 when the U.S. was helping overthrow...
Yeah, we helped overthrow a democratically elected government, which was closer to Russia. Yeah. We came in with like the color revolution. It seemed like the CIA, George Soros, probably Jeffrey Epstein, and we overthrew the government.
So Epstein had never been known to be a part of that. So you read the files, and now he's talking about all the opportunities that will be created because of this.
Yeah. Right?
And so one of those opportunities, I'm sure, was to traffic children out of Ukraine. Ukraine is famously one of the strongest human trafficking points in the world.
God, where
these
terrible.
Kids are trafficked out of there. He was very close to Zelensky, had a lot of meetings with him, one-on-one personal meetings. At one point, after Epstein is dead in 2022, right when the war starts, Zelensky approaches a woman by the name of Marina Abramovich and asks her to come and be an ambassador on Ukraine's behalf. Now, she's Romanian. She's not even Ukrainian.
So that makes no sense.
But get this. He wants her to be the ambassador for Ukraine to the orphans.
Oh, my God.
Created by the war.
That's crazy. You know, I was just... I did a little thing on her, and recently I was pulling up all these old pictures, and I found tons of pictures of these like kids sitting in their lap, look troubled. They look like orphans to me. There were a lot of them were like Asian and stuff. I don't know where the kids came from, but they looked just like really scared and depressed. They'd be sitting in their lap, sometimes holding guns, and I'm thinking, oh man, they're getting kids from orphans. This is terrible. So these weren't in Ukraine; these are older pictures, right. But that's like
right.
That's troubling.
Yeah, it's very troubling. Why is Marina Abramovich, same spirit cooking artist? Whatever she is, even if she's not doing anything wrong there, why would she be qualified to be an ambassador to Ukraine? And why would you put her working with orphans created by the war? Unless the point is trafficking children. Yeah.
And this is by far the easiest kids to traffic. They're orphanages.
Oh,
they have no one watching them. It's pretty much like free kids. And you see all these, I believe, didn't Hillary Clinton, someone that worked for her, was getting orphans out of Haiti.
Remember, the Clinton Foundation went into Haiti and they were going to put all this money in and they were going to rebuild the country. They just stole all the money. Nothing ever went to the people in Haiti. The businesses that committed to putting business, none of them went there. Walmart, all these corporations were going to go there. They didn't go there.
Yeah, but they literally got arrested for trafficking kids out of there.
A woman from her foundation was banned from Haiti, and there was a warrant out for her arrest because she was moving orphans out after the earthquake.
I'm not going to say she was doing anything nefarious here, but Erica Kirk, at like 17 or 18, having an orphanage in Romania. It just seems bizarre.
It is bizarre, right? And listen, Eastern Europe is, it's not, guys.
They don't track the kids that well, I'd imagine.
No.
You could pay somebody $100,000 and then, oh yeah, we're taking all these kids.
But you have to remember, Eastern Europe, we already know this. So one of the things that drives me crazy, especially as a journalist, right, is that we treat everything in our current media like it happens in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Right? So if you said, you know, Ukraine's super corrupt, people were like, oh, you Putin lover. Well, wait a minute, hold on.
But it's been known that.
For decades.
Wasn't like that was part of the corruption with both, I believe, both Trump and Biden.
Yes.
That was like they both had...
And John Kerry and like all these elites in the United States would send their kids over there to steal all this money. The United Nations.
It was Hunter. He was getting, wasn't it?
Yeah, from Burisma.
And he was getting like hundreds 50, of
$50,000 a month.
Yeah. He's really competent.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's about crack.
Yeah. But the thing with Ukraine is the UN did released a report, and they released one every year of like the most corrupt countries. And for like two decades, Ukraine was number one.
Wow.
It's the most corrupt country in Europe. Everyone knows
this. And we're just fighting that proxy war with Russia there. Hundreds of thousands of people have died. Nothing's changed. They're all right in the same standstill. I mean, I haven't covered that war enough, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just...
We could spend a couple hours...
It just kind of gets ignored, and like hundreds of thousands of people are dying. We're paying hundreds of billions of dollars just to keep fighting going. And Zelensky doesn't care. No, so it's almost like he's clearing it out for other people. I think he did say he wants it to be a big Israel.
Well, he just announced today to replace all these men who he's killed off the entire country
yeah.
of men.
Yeah.
By the way, the men who have fled. So there are three countries that have taken the most people from Ukraine, mm-hmm. right? Number one would be Russia, which is most media would be like, or people who watch the media would be shocked to hear that.
Yeah.
Because you think, well, wait a minute. What do you mean, Russia?
Yeah.
I thought they hated Russia.
No, well, lots of them like Russia.
Eastern Ukraine is Russian. Yeah. They're ethnically Russian. They speak Russian.
Yeah.
That's why this war is actually happening.
Lots of people are fighting to be part of Russia.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, those Donetsk provinces mm-hmm. in the eastern part of the country haven't been a part of Ukraine since 2014. They've tried to be independent yeah. all this time. That's why Crimea is not a part of it.
Yeah.
We hear, and you know, if you yeah, watch CNN and Fox, the Russians stole Crimea. Right. And they illegally annexed it. Mm. The people in Crimea voted in a referendum 90% to join Russia.
Wow.
Right. They don't want to be a part of Ukraine. Mm. Having said that, the largest, and if you don't believe me, why would the largest number of people who flee the war go into Russia?
Yeah.
Right. Second largest would be Poland, because obviously geographically it's right there. Yeah. So basically, Ukraine in reality, there's Eastern, Western. Eastern is Russian, yeah. Western is Ukrainian.
Yeah.
And then the third largest is in Germany. Now, last week, Zelensky goes to Germany. He meets with Chancellor Merz. They talk about some deal they're going to do over weapons. But the real reason he's there, Merz makes a statement that they want all of the men in Germany who are from Ukraine, who fled there, to now go back.
Wow.
Because they have no one to fight anymore.
Are they trying to get the government of Germany to like force them back, yes. or trying to get them voluntarily to go back?
Well, they want them to voluntarily go. But then this weekend, Zelensky makes an announcement again. Saying he wants every country in Europe
to forcibly send
back those men so they can fight.
Go die for Zelensky to fight a war they're not going to win.
He's the meat grinder. If you've ever seen the videos, have you seen the videos online on Telegram and stuff of these conscription officers?
When they go and grab
people. Grab them off the street.
Yeah, they pick people off the street and they force them in vans because they don't want to fight this war. It's a pointless war. It's like Russia's already taken the land. They're not trying to take the whole country.
No. Well, if Russia wanted to take Ukraine, they could have taken it.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly could have taken it in the last 6 weeks when we're fighting with Iran, when yeah. we don't even have any weapons to send.
Yeah, America's like out of weapons. Yeah. It was kind of embarrassing, that whole clusterfuck over there.
It's a disaster. But while Zelensky's doing that, he announces yesterday that he wants to now import mm-hmm. large numbers of migrant men from Africa
what?
Into the country oh, because we need help with jobs and manufacturing. So he wants to import. Like, it's, if you look
I
at what
happened, that. I missed it.
It's so insane. So you have literally killed the entire male population in your country, and you're going to replace them now with migrants from Africa.
Wow, this guy is.
It's unbelievable.
And he was good friends with Jeffrey Epstein.
And he's good friends with
The same religion as him.
He is.
So maybe they don't love some of the people they're killing.
He also just passed a law last week in Ukraine that it is now a prison. It's illegal, and now you can get prison time for criticizing Israel.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if it's correct, like 8 years in prison.
Yeah.
Like all around the world, why do all these countries have laws that you can't criticize Israel? It's like, I just want to be treated equally.
Yeah.
I'm attacked and called anti-Semitic for wanting equal treatment.
Right. Right. It's like, I know you're constantly attacking that.
Yeah. Just for like being, when you see things like, hey, this isn't fair. I don't want my money to kill children. I don't want.
Right.
Even America, they're trying to pass anti.
Jew hater.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They realize anti-Semitic doesn't work more. So now they're like Jew haters, not working. But they're completely losing information war.
They are losing. Well, they've lost the information.
Yeah, so I don't. Right. They don't even care though. Yeah. So I don't know what they have planned.
The stats in terms of especially like Gen Z and males between mm-hmm. 18 and 50, like Israel was so yeah. underwater.
That's why I'm like, I don't need to talk about it that much anymore. I still do. Yeah. I still do some, but it's like I think everyone else is now. I've done my part.
Right.
Like I want to find other subjects.
You took the hits.
Yeah.
In order to make it where it's comfortable for people.
Exactly. But now if you're not mm-hmm. talking about it, you're being attacked.
Yes.
Rightfully so. Because it's like, there's no excuse at this point. Yeah. If you're still defending Israel, you're either dumb, being paid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or evil.
Or thinking you're going to get paid and then you find out you're not.
This is
getting the $7,000.
I know. That's hilarious. Well, I know a couple of these remaining Trump like MAG influencers are being paid.
Yeah.
It's just like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's actually kind of sad, which is why, you know, we were talking out there that I think when I look and I, you know, try to report on things, I think if people will look at my history, mm-hmm. it's incredibly consistent,
right?
Yeah. Whether you agree with me or disagree with me, it's incredibly consistent. And I don't have a single story that you can point to and say, well, you were proven wrong on this one.
Yeah, that's, no one, hardly anyone could say that. Yeah. Consistency and not getting, getting most things right.
Because we don't, we really have a process of not trying to put my opinion or my view on things.
Yeah.
All right. If you just, if you pursue facts and where they take you, you're rarely going to be wrong. Now, you might not always be right over the target.
Yeah.
But because you keep following it, eventually you'll get over the target because you keep following where it takes you, which is why, like, I've been covering Epstein since 2014. A lot of people didn't even know who Jeffrey Epstein was. Yeah. But I had no idea that he would even be connected to the Pizzagate stuff.
That's crazy. So you just, it seems like all this stuff's converging.
It does, doesn't it? Almost, almost in a cinematic way. Where things are connected to each other, it's like,
but you didn't know.
They really are all connected, you know?
It seems like the elite people at the top are connected and not doing good things.
They're not doing good things.
And we're at an interesting time where everyone's kind of seeing it now, and they don't really care, so I don't really know where it's going
to
go.
That's the danger, right? The danger is that you always get to the point where you're inoculating the public in terms of their view of those things, and it's like, okay, yeah, they're all a bunch of pedophiles, and yeah, they're all crazy, but what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, they seem to just not care.
WrestleMania's this weekend.
Go watch WrestleMania.
Exactly.
Well, like
another fake thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like Trump, he's like, you know, they voted for release the Epstein files. He's just like, nah, no, we're good. I'll release a few of them.
Yeah. Well, release the Epstein files, prosecute someone associated with the stuff. Like, nothing's happening with any of them. Well,
even look how much crazy shit is in what he did release. Imagine what he didn't release. Clearly, there's some like dark. I mean, obviously, it's connecting Israel too. He doesn't want that out, but I think it goes much darker.
Yeah, I think it does too. So there's an interesting. If you're looking at the analysis in terms of content of the Epstein files, only about half the files have been released.
Yeah,
but that's a little misleading, right? Because they'll say, well, there's six million files, 3 million have been released. So that would indicate that 50% is out.
Yeah,
but if you look at the data, how much data has been released? Mm-hmm. Less than 2% of the data has been released.
Does that mean like videos?
And that means videos.
Remember Pam Bondi? Didn't she pretty much say they had pictures of kids being like harmed and even killed?
She did, but then she changed that to say that the videos are disgusting videos that I'm never going to release to the public because these are just videos that he downloaded. It's like, downloaded? These aren't videos. No one's looking for videos that Jeffrey Epstein downloaded. Yeah. We're looking for the videos that Jeffrey Epstein was capturing and recording. And it is true, there's a lot of sharing of files. But that, by the way, that's also all pedophile ritualistic stuff. I say ritualistic because there seems to be a correlation between the need to harm children and the need to share that with others who were doing the same thing.
I notice these guys like to share their images and like, why do you think that is? It's just...
I think it's part of the ritualistic part of it.
Because that's just so strange that they do this most deviant thing, but then they want a community where they can share it. There was a case a few years ago where someone like molested a child and he like maybe a 2-year-old and he like uploaded it to he got caught because, you know, he put it in these chat rooms. It just seems so sick that they have these organized groups where they connect.
So there are people who think, you know, you think that the pedophile was like the loner, he's like BTK, right? No one ever knows who that person is. And then they just like take their victim and no, this is very different. And that's why I think it does go back to a connection to ritualistic and satanic stuff, because there is a belief within that world that they actually derive power from this. And part of the power is consent, not the consent of the person they're harming. It's consent when you share it. So when other people see it or other people are forced to accept what you've done, you derive power. That's what they believe. I don't believe it's true, but I believe it's true that they believe this. Yeah. It's part of their kind of religious belief. And so part of that kind of satanic ritualistic abuse is the belief that they're deriving power. So they have to share it and they have to tell others about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, they have to in these groups. And like, well, when I started looking at the satanic, I noticed it was always the same in different places. The stories were like identical. That's when I started being like, oh, it's so weird. The satanic rituals, the different people, they want to, the sexual abuse, kids to harm other kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like sick and twisted. And then there's connections to the same people, like the Franklin scandal. I haven't done that much research in it, but I know the guy that was involved. He was the Church of Set. What's his name? He's this high-level military guy. He was like psychological warfare. He was the head of that department. He was, what's this guy's name? Queens. I can't remember his name. But anyways, he left the Church of Satan to start the Church of Set, which he said was the real deity, the ancient Egyptian god.
Okay.
And in San Francisco, he was accused of molesting and raping like 100 children. with satanic rituals. And I guess he had some connections giving money to the guys in Franklin Scandal. Who was the main guy in Ring Scandal? King or something?
Yeah, because this is the Franklin, it was the credit union, right?
Yeah.
It was the Franklin Credit Union in Omaha, Nebraska,
yeah.
I believe. And so, yeah, they were receiving all this money. And then there's also supposed to be a connection there between them and Boys Town. How old are you?
I'm 47.
Oh, we're the same age. Okay. Yeah. So then you should probably remember this. When we were kids, like in the 80s, you would watch, like have commercials come on for Boys Town Hotline, right? Remember this? If you were a runaway, call this number.
Oh, shit.
And so there was these PSAs that would run all over the country for Boys Town Hotline. Well, Boys Town was this organization that would take kids who would run away from home, and they would take them to this place where they could be safe. Well, according to this, the story around the Franklin scandal is that they were putting money, Boys Town was getting money from this Franklin Credit Union.
And they were bringing them to that.
They were bringing boys there, and then those boys were being put on buses and taken to D.C., and they were being abused in D.C.
Wow.
No, that's the story. Now, I don't know. I don't know.
True,
that's
true. But yeah, you see, but we see the same patterns over and over.
But the same patterns. Where do you access or collect and get access to large groups of young children or young boys?
Orphanages.
Where you would get them. I know of a story. So we're working on a film. I can say this much. We're working on a film that ties all these things together.
Yeah, because it's so much. I think that's important. Yeah, tying this all together, I think, is important, because that's when you can start believing it, maybe. Because I'm at this stage, didn't believe it. And I see this looks weird over here. See, this looks weird in here. And you start seeing it's all connected, like all these. That's when I really started looking. I looked like 7 or 8 different of these satanic things, and they were all just identical with how the stories were told. And here's something, too. A lot of times the kids are a little bit messed up, or the adults, because they went through all the sexual abuse. So then they'll use that to attack their credibility.
Yeah.
Because they were so badly abused, they have a little problems.
Yeah. Who wouldn't, right?
Exactly. So they use that to attack their credibility.
Yeah. Which has always been done, right? That's what they do with any of the women who have been abused, and it's like, well, she's crazy, or she's made these accusations, or she's done this to try to get money. And by the way, that does happen.
No, exactly. It does happen. So we can't
outright dismiss.
That's why one or two of these you can all just ignore. But when you start seeing the same pattern, the same details, the same
Eric
people.
Swalwell, the guy from California, the congressman who's running for governor, right? It was like, oh, someone comes out against him. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah, well, that happens. And then all of a sudden you've got 10 women who are coming out against you, all with their own stories. Yeah, probably guilty of something. Right.
Exactly.
And so he's like, well, I never did anything, but I'm going to step down anyways. Now you're stepping down because
this is, you did something. Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a pattern, right? You got to look for the patterns in it. And so you find that. And one of the things that on the film we're working on, trying to explain, because that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to explain in this film, here are the patterns of how this works. Here's the pattern of the ritualistic stuff. Here's the pattern of how different groups are affected. And one of them that we're going to talk about is a case where this guy was convicted, but he was running a system through the foster care system, and that's how he would recruit girls.
That's another big one. Yeah, the foster care, the orphanage, just the most evil stuff. You get these kids that are already troubled. It's just hard. I guess it's hard for a normal person to grasp it, I think. Because to us, it just seems so evil to be like, no way the most powerful people in the world are doing this.
I think there goes further than that. I think you cannot accept the most powerful people are doing it, because here's where we can accept it. We can accept it 40 years from now, to say, back then, the most powerful people in the world were doing this. Yeah. And people will say, tell me their names. I believe you.
True.
You can't say it now, because if you say right now, the most powerful people in the world are doing it, you got to do something about that.
Yeah.
Are you going to tell me that we're going to allow ourselves to continue to be ruled and governed by pedophiles?
Yeah. I think a lot of people kind of realize we are now, though.
Yeah. And so what do? You either have to step back and say, I can't believe it. I don't want to talk about it. Let's change the subject. Or you have to do something. But are you going to actually sit there and say, well, I'm going to accept the idea that the majority of these people are abusing children? Because here's the thing. If you're abusing children, you're one of the worst people on the planet, right? And that doesn't mean you're irredeemable. But what it does mean is, if you will sexually abuse a child, there is nothing you will not do.
Yeah.
Which is also why you can look and say, why do we allow children all over the world to be bombed into an oblivion for the last 40 years? Why are we allowing that?
It's like they don't care. It doesn't bother them.
Why would they care?
Yeah.
If you're willing to abuse children, why wouldn't you abuse their children?
10,000 kids over here, 100,000 or 1 million.
Yeah.
And some of these guys, maybe they have the stuff on video. So then you have to be all in.
You see, the World Economic Forum, the WEF, and people like that, the people who were involved in all those groups, people who are involved in the World Health Organization. You say, but when COVID comes along and you're like, well, but you're giving people these experimental vaccines, you're watching people die and they can't be with their families.
Trust the science.
You trust the science as you put people in a position where they lose their livelihood, they lose their businesses. So many people died as a result of lockdowns.
Oh, yeah, because we're not meant to be isolated. We're not meant to be indoors, mm-hmm. not around people. Mm-hmm. They told us the opposite. It's like they were trying to kill us. Don't get sunlight. Don't exercise. Stay
away from the ocean.
Stay away from the ocean. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't really that political till then. It forced me to be. I retired from fighting, and then they're just like, I've always had a good bullshit detector. I could just see, like, there's not a deadly virus. Like, I believe my own eyes and ears. There's not a deadly virus. People aren't dying everywhere. They're telling us stuff that makes no sense. All my friends' businesses are closed, but the big businesses are owned. Mm-hmm. And friends getting depressed. You know, a friend killed himself. Friends getting addicted to drugs. Tell me, oh, I have to just stay at home. I wasn't working, retired, and just sit at home all day and do nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't go to national parks. I started driving around the country to go to national parks. They closed the national parks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so I can't go to Yosemite?
Yeah. And why? Right, I can't be alone in this wide open space.
And they'd gaslight on me. You're not a doctor. You're not an expert. And people were doing it on Twitter too. It's like, oh, you're not a doctor. Like, yeah. I don't need to be a doctor to like look at a study.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you're living through that, and you say, well, wait a minute, why? I have to believe that these people are just ignorant, right? Because if I believe they're doing this intentionally.
See, I don't believe they're stupid because I could very easily see it wasn't real. And I don't think I'm a lot smarter than them.
Right.
But I was 100% it wasn't a bad virus. So it's like either I'm that much smarter than them or they're evil and lying. And I think it's they're evil and lying. I don't think I'm that much smarter than
them. But that's what I'm saying is the majority of the people can't do that.
Yeah.
Because if you say, I believe that they are evil and they're lying.
Yeah.
I can't allow them to continue to rule over me. Right. First of all, in the United States, they're not supposed to be ruling over us,
no.
But they are.
Yeah.
But you would say, but I can't allow this anymore. I mean, how can you allow these people to remain in these positions?
And it's like we can't vote our way out of it because it's both sides, and it's like the FBI, the CIA. Yeah. I mean, Trump, he ran on this. Yeah. That's why the people that are still supporting Trump is just sad because he did the exact opposite. It shows their celebrity worship. It's like they might as well worship Kim Kardashian because it's no different. If you say you're gonna do something, do the exact opposite. And then be like, oh, you betrayed the president. I think they all know it's sad. The remaining MAGA, you can just feel the low energy, the kind of like.
But listen, if anybody who doesn't believe it, just wait for the midterms.
Oh, they're
because it's not that so many of these people are going to go, disaffected MAGA are going to go out and vote Democrat. They're just not going to vote.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to look like a TPU USA event. It's got to be five people there and Erica Kirk doesn't even show up.
Did you see they say, oh, well, it was only like that because the leftists, they took all the tickets.
Yeah, come. They took all the free tickets.
It was the left.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love how they're trying to, that's like the playbook from like 2022, right? Yeah,
that's why nobody's
like,
here.
Hates us. They're trying to ruin everything. And it's like, actually, the left doesn't care about you at all. The left is just sitting back because they haven't gotten. Here's the crazy part: the left doesn't have any new ideas. They're still stuck back on Kamala Harris, Joe Biden policies.
Yeah,
they're just waiting because they're like, we don't have to do anything.
No, they're not really talking right now. They probably because obviously the tranny stuff was a complete failure. Mm-hmm. The gay rights, so they're just kind of quiet right now.
The immigration stuff was a failure. They don't have one single policy that is popular with the American people.
So just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, because instead there's a civil war. I saw Matt Walsh post that he said, if there's going to be a civil war in the United States between conservatives, let's have the dividing line be over abortion and, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm like, here's the problem that you're wishing for something that's not going
to
happen.
Exactly. These guys are trying to, he doesn't want to touch the Israel issue because his boss, if you criticize Israel, they'll fire you too much. So he's trying to avoid it. I laugh at the people that are trying to not pick a side. It's like, it's pretty clear right now. If you're not picking a side, you're a coward.
Yeah.
You know, there's the people that are all in on one side, all the other guys are still trying to fence it. It's like, there's no fencing on this issue. It's like good versus evil.
Well, I think what you're hoping is that Trump will come back. And on some level, Trump wakes up and says, oh yeah, wait a minute. I remember what I campaigned on. Let's go ahead and do that stuff.
That'd be great. Right? But I would be so surprised.
I don't.
Laura Loomer and Mark Levin wouldn't approve.
Yeah, those two have to go in order for that to happen. But I think here's the only way it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
This will be my eternal optimist here.
Yeah,
the only way it happens is if you get shellacked in the midterms, and you're going to.
Yeah,
then you turn around and say, "Wait a minute." So maybe it becomes a reality check for Trump, where he realizes that no, I don't just command the asses and they do whatever I want, and actually, maybe I am doing unpopular things. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, because I will say this, Trump is, I think, the smartest person we've ever had for president. I truly believe that he's an incredibly intelligent person. I think he's too intelligent to not understand and read people. I think he actually really knows how to do that better than any modern president. Mm-hmm. But I think he's isolated.
Yeah, I think he has a bunch of yes men around him. And they're not telling him what they want. They send him, like you said, well, Jared told me when I bombed Iran.
And then they're going to be,
so I think he got in that war thinking it was going to be easy after Venezuela and it turned into a complete mess.
And I think the Israelis lied and told him it'll be just like Venezuela.
Yeah.
And I think that he believed them and said, all right, yeah, we'll do it. And I think the problem is they got him stuck.
Yeah, because then it's
now he can't get out.
Because like, oh, what, will I just accept losing a war to Iran? Oh, I have to win the war now. But then it's like...
And by the way, you do. Mm-hmm. You have to win the war. The problem is you can't.
Yeah.
So if you can't win the war, you have to do what Trump is trying to do, which is you're trying to pretend that, we won.
Yeah.
Just declare you won. Reopen the strait. Yeah. Well, the strait was open before you started it. And, well, we won because they don't have a nuclear weapon. They didn't have a nuclear weapon before you started. Doesn't matter. Just end it. And the reason we can't is because every time they get close, Netanyahu picks up the phone and calls and says they're not ended.
Yep.
That's what happened when J.D. Vance went to Pakistan. They're trying to come to some terms. The Iranians showed up, according to reports, with dozens and dozens of pages of documents ready to sign a deal.
Yeah.
They're ready to go. And they were very close, apparently. And then Netanyahu calls and blows the whole thing up. And according to the Iranians, after the phone call, Vance never even came back in the room.
Wow.
They just left.
Crazy that he calls Netanyahu instead of Trump.
Well, that's such a huge problem.
It's almost like I don't know, maybe Trump can't do anything. He might be blackmailed. There might be something really dark in the Epstein files that they're kind of like, hey, you do what we tell you. Because it seems like he's completely cucks to anything Netanyahu says. He pulls his chair out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Part of me thinks it's not that they have him so compromised. I think a lot of it's just a money thing.
Oh, yeah. They paid him hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah. This is like very trackable, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, $250 million alone came from Miriam Adelson.
Yeah.
Right. So the amount of money is staggering.
So he feels like he owes them, but then it's just...
And I think that Trump also believes... I think it's more than just feeling like he owes them. I think Trump believes that he can bend reality. And in a lot of ways, politically, he has.
No, he did politically, but now he's losing his base. I mean, there's still some hanging on, but he's really... People try and act like he's not losing his base or delusional.
Well, you have to think about what his base was, first of all. His base was... establishment Republicans, right? They were, by the way, the least in his base.
Yeah, they hated him.
Right. They were the ones voting for Nikki Haley and other people in the primaries. But you had your white, non-college-educated, working-class voters, right, which was his primary MAGA base. Then you had disaffected libertarians who were like, we're never going to get a president, but this guy says he won't start any wars, so we'll go there.
Yeah.
You had a lot of independents who said, we'll move that way because the trans stuff is too crazy and the immigration stuff is too crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had a coalition of young males who had not voted in any previous election who showed up. That's the Joe Rogan, Theo Vaughn kind of audience who said, I'll give this guy a try because he says he's going to do certain things that we really need done. And so we'll try. I would say of all those groups, Trump's lost all of them.
Yeah.
All of them. I just saw a poll the other day that shows that with white, working class, non-college educated voters, he is now underwater for the first time since 2016. -4.
CNN said he has 100% support still.
And he's repeating it. Yeah. He keeps going out and saying that he has 100% support for MAGA. No, you don't, Mr. President. Now, there's a report that Susie Wiles, who's his chief of staff, has told people in the administration, you got to start telling them the truth. I think he's just isolated. I think he does.
Too isolated. Well, like Laura Loomer talks about how, I sent the president this. Yeah. Like Mark Levine, he's always tweeting out. It's bizarre, the tweets he signs out.
They work to make him paranoid.
Yeah, it's like weird. They call him, they hype him up. Everyone's against you, Mr. President. Maybe he's getting a little bit senile, too. He's not like if Biden level, but maybe he's like the beginning.
I don't think a corpse is Biden level.
Isn't it funny how the Democrats just like gaslighted us? No, he's fine. Then all of a sudden they made it right at the end, and then they're like, now we're gonna pull in Kamala Harris.
Yeah. And no one's gonna vote for her.
Yeah, she's just so unlikable.
Yeah. And now she's saying she might run again.
Oh God.
Best thing that could happen to Republicans to save them is it would be her.
That's like the only thing they could save
Republicans. It's going to be interesting, too, to see how, like, with Vance and Rubio, I mean, Rubio's pretty popular, but he's not going to be able to pull together that coalition. See, what Trump did, too, that's so unique, Dave Smith talks about this a lot, and he's absolutely right. Trump pulled together and won the popular vote as a Republican for the first time in modern history. That is remarkable. Because Republicans don't win the popular vote. They win the Electoral College. He won the popular vote. It's pretty stunning to think this guy had that kind of support.
He was
and
so,
to burn it all down in a year.
Exactly, he's burnt it all down. Especially the first election when he was like, he pissed people off so bad. He was so different. Anti-war, free speech, ran all that. And he did okay the first term. But this term, I think he was terrible, but I didn't like some things he did. This term has just been a disaster.
It really has been. It's incredibly disappointing. I mean, there's a few things he's done. He has closed the border.
Oh, that's good.
So he actually has, he's kept that promise. The deportations have not happened.
Haven't done that, but at least closed the border.
But he closed the border. So that was huge. At least you stop stick your finger in the hole, stop the water from coming in. But I think the biggest problem that we have with Trump right now is that, again, we need candidate Trump to come back.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like, and I know he can't do this, where Trump thrives is going out and speaking.
Yeah.
And being around people. And I think he's too isolated from people.
You know, they took him off Twitter too. That might part of it. He can't see the comments. They ban everyone on True Social. Mm-hmm. So he can't even see the reaction to his stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe they deliberately got him off there. Like, yeah, go to True Social. Mm-hmm. And he sends these long texts you can't even read. It's like, you look at that, you're like, at least do a little spaces or something.
Yeah,
usually you can't like read
it's
that.
It's like rambling and it's angry.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, yeah, it's this direction, then that direction, mm-hmm. like the president's releasing these type of things.
Well, and it's crazy when the people that he's most angry with are the people who supported him the most.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if like your six like best friends started attacking you. You would think like, shit, I better like pause and look. I wouldn't be like, they're all traitors. They betrayed me. I'd be like, oh, my six best friends are saying I'm doing something wrong. I better take a pause, reevaluate, and get back on track.
Yeah. I will say that one thing I see him doing like with the war stuff that's very interesting to me. So I'm super anti-war.
Yeah.
And you can look at my record on that.
Yeah, I looked at his share of this interview. Consistency. You call it out in the left and the right. And most people don't do that. It pisses me off. I've always been anti-war too, left versus right.
Yeah.
Anti-Ukraine war, anti-Israel war, anti-Iraq war.
What good is any of it, right?
Yeah.
But I think that Trump now wants, $1.5 trillion to go to the military. And I would say that's totally crazy. It's not, first of all, can't happen. It won't happen because Congress can't vote for that because you all lose your seats because you're going to cut, Medicare and Medicaid, and you're going to cut food stamps, and you're going to cut, farmer subsidies. Basically, every single voting bloc is going to be affected by it. The only ones who will get anything out of it are the military guys. Mm-hmm. But so not going to happen. But when I first heard this, I was like, this is crazy. Like, what is he thinking? But watching the Iran war, and I'm like, well, Trump's actually not wrong.
Yeah. He's not wrong. The military is not as tough as we thought. I think he kind of exposed it to the world, like the fact that we're having trouble with Iran. China's probably looking at this being like,
Oh, China's like delighted.
Yeah.
They're delighted by two things. One is the inability that we've had. Look, Iran is just a regional power.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a great world power. Sorry, Iranians, if you're watching this and you're like, well, we're so strong, but you're not, but you are, right? Because what you did was you got smart.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great book called The Starfish and the Spider. It's from about 20 years ago. And it's about decentralization and the concept of that within technology. Well, the Iranians figured that out within military.
Yeah.
Right. Which was they watched what happened to Saddam Hussein. They watched what happened to Gaddafi in Libya. They watched what happened to Assad in Syria. And they said, how are we going to prevent this from happening to us? Because it is the decapitation strategy.
Yeah.
You go in, you kill the leader, you take him out, and then everything falls apart.
Yeah.
And so what they said was we're going to decentralize this. And Khomeini, the former supreme leader who was killed when we bombed him and his whole family and all the leadership, he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't know it was coming in that moment, but he knew they were going to take him out.
He had planned for it, yeah.
And he had planned for it for over a decade. And the plan was they have all these regional generals who have assignments all throughout the country that you already have your orders. You don't have to request it. So that's one reason why the missiles keep getting fired into Israel, right? Is because they're not, there's no central command.
Different areas with their own missiles and shootings. So they can't really stop it.
Yeah. And they figured out how to do this. They figured out how to move everything around, put everything underground. This is a very, very smart strategy. But again, it's just a regional power. But here's where we're the most exposed. We're the most exposed because if you think about it this way, the military-industrial complex in this country has run a scam on the American people for a long time.
Yes.
And one of the scams they've run is this idea of spending enormous amounts of money on a very little bit of equipment. Mm-hmm. But what we were told was the equipment is so advanced that it's worth that that cost because nobody can compete with us, right?
Yeah.
So just as an example, we have seven of these radar planes, right? Mm-hmm. $600 million a piece. But there's only seven of them in the world, right? Well, now there's only six of them. Why? Because the Iranians flew a $20,000 Shahed drone and split one in half and destroyed it. Well, now do the math on that. $600 million for one plane versus a $20,000 drone. And so what this war has exposed is that this is not Iraq 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. The world moved on militarily. Yeah. We have not moved on militarily.
And we're just, these people are almost gouging us price-wise. Yes. They know they can charge us. It's probably, who knows what they cost to make. It's like they're just sucking money off us.
Yep.
Really ways to give kickback, you know?
Oh, absolutely. They're all getting paid. They make very few. So Trump was, he called all the Raytheon, he called all the people into the Oval Office recently saying that he wanted them to step up and increase the amount of weaponry that was created, right? The problem is they can't do it because they don't have the production lines to do it.
Yes, we can't even make it quick.
No, can't make it quick. We fired off, I think, half of all of our Patriot missiles within the first 4 weeks. It's like half?
Yeah.
So in 8 weeks, we have none?
Yeah, that's scary.
Israel's Iron Dome was like, that
stopped working.
Yeah.
Again, we paid for that.
Yep. Thad missile, all the Thad missile radars in the region, the Iranians took out almost all of them. If you look at one of the things that's very interesting, I don't know if you know this or not, there is I don't know a name off the top of my head, but there is a satellite imaging company that put out that the Trump administration and the Pentagon basically called them and instructed them to not release satellite images.
I heard that.
Over the Middle East. Now, originally it was like, oh, because they don't want the Iranians to see. The Iranians are not using an open source thing to do that. The reason they're saying that is because they don't want people to see what the Iranians did to our bases.
Yeah, they destroyed the U.S. military bases. I think that's important to point out. Like a lot of them, it looks like a lot of damage. It's hard getting good images of it, but it looks like a lot of damages.
Well, beyond a lot of damages, there are reports that they're totally uninhabitable.
Yeah, our bases are almost, I mean, honestly, I don't think you should have bases over there, but the fact that they all could be destroyed. Right. People use like, oh, we support Israel because they're so we can help fight those wars. The wars are for Israel. We don't need all the, we had no problems in the Middle East until Israel.
Yeah. And why do we have, if you look at the map now, basically the Iranians took out everything around them. Mm-hmm. All those bases are gone. I think it's something like 13 U.S. bases completely obliterated that cannot be used right now. That's about $12 trillion that we have spent over the last 30 years building up those bases across the
Middle East. That's insane. We're already $40 trillion in debt.
Yeah. And think about what that means for the American people. If 40 years ago you rewinded and we didn't start spending that $12 trillion overseas and we spent it here at home and we fixed our roads and our bridges and our subways. You know, they talk about Marco Rubio has that soundbite where he says if the Iranians had spent their money on their people instead of on missiles. Have you seen the Iranian subway systems?
Probably a lot better than ours.
They're gorgeous. They look like museums.
Yeah. People think it's like a third world country. It's not. They're not these backwards people.
They're not. It's incredible. It's like when Tucker Carlson had the audacity to go to Moscow and show us how clean their subway stations are versus the ones here. They're full of rats and homeless people and graffiti. And you get stabbed to death while waiting for a train. I mean, it's crazy how we have watched our country deteriorate.
Yeah.
While we've spent all of our treasure on these stupid wars that get us nothing.
I couldn't agree more. It'd be different if our country was thriving. You know, we don't have free healthcare. The schools are barely usable. The public schools, like, you know, a lot of times you have to send your kid to private schools. It's just like everything's falling apart here. Mm-hmm. We just pump more and more money. And
nobody can afford
Trump
a home.
To double it. It's just, home. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Do you hear when Trump said, like, he was trying to make homes affordable? And then he's like, oh, never mind. I want people to keep their wealth in their home. It's like, well, if I have a home, does it really matter that much if my home goes down a little bit in value so a younger person can buy a home?
Right.
I think I'd be okay with that.
Well, because the problem is we've created this idea that, so I live in Miami. Mm-hmm. Miami's the most insane place in the world for home prices, right? Because after COVID, basically everything doubled and tripled in value because so many people were
leaving California. I was in San Francisco. I fled.
Yeah.
I'm a refugee.
Yeah, exactly. And in Miami, it's crazy because if you look at even now, so it's now 2026, it ain't COVID anymore, guys. Mm-hmm. And yet people will sell their homes. And if you look at Zillow and what they bought it for and what they're selling it for, everyone expects it to double in value.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what how long they've been in. I've been in for 1 year. Wanted to double in value.
Yeah.
Right. It's totally.
So when you look at homes, it's just a way to jump money, but that's not what a home for a city. I think people, they get surprised sometimes when you can lose money in a home.
Right.
Like the Bay Area example, prices went way down. I have friends, they bought their homes worth less than they bought it for and stuff. They're like places like Oakland. It's you look at it, oh, home has to always go up. That can't, it can't
get, that's not sustainable.
It can't do that.
Yeah.
And look what happened, like in, what was it, 2008, with the crash?
Yes. And if you think about it, I mean, for people to think that that's the way it works, is that's insane.
Yeah.
It cannot be a system where money, as you say, in your home always increases in value and the home is always going up. And so we're starting to experience a lot of that. And then you look at what's happened in the Middle East. Now, here's my hope. I know it's not the case, but I kind of threw out this theory a while ago and I was like wishing it was true, which is that this was all part of Trump's super secret devious plan of how he was actually going to get us out of the Middle East, because he said the Iran war would be the end of the end.
That would be awesome.
And that the plan was, I'll never be able to get Congress to let me close bases, and I'll never be able to get the military industrial complex to do it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and pick a fight with Iran, and I'm going to let them wipe out all the bases. And then I'm going to say, well, we can't afford to go back there, so we're leaving. That's my hope.
Unlikely, but I'll be the first to admit it and apologize.
I would love it if it was the
case. Really, no, I hope so, too. That would be awesome.
I wish that were. That would be the 5D chess that we're talking about. I doubt it's true.
I'll be the first to apologize if that is the case. I have no problem admitting I'm wrong. I might be wrong, but I want to admit I'm wrong on this one.
Yeah, it would be beautiful if he just said, oh, well, we're out of there. We're not doing this anymore. But unfortunately, you know, it doesn't seem to be happening because we can't seem to get the door closed on that. But we can't win it.
Exactly. I don't think we can win it, but then he can't leave it either. So it's like a fucked situation.
It's interesting, too, because did you see last week he had a request with Ford and General Motors for them to start building weapons? So I thought that was very interesting because that hasn't happened since World War II.
I didn't know you had that meeting. That's interesting.
Yeah. Why would you ask car makers? Well, it's because they have supply chains, so they and they have manufacturing capacity.
Yeah.
But I think what he was really doing, so I actually talked to Marjorie Taylor Greene about this, and I thought it was, why would he do it? And my theory is, I don't know that it's right, but my theory is that with the whole drone thing that's gone on, and he sees what's happened, anyone who's paying attention, because this got exposed in the Russia-Ukraine war, right?
Yeah.
Which is that the real warfare now is drone war.
Drone, which is kind of scary.
It is, because it's so much more capable and so much less expensive to create.
Telling you, it's just so and it's a little scary too, like our own government can use it against us.
Absolutely. But who in the world is the most advanced in terms of drones?
Actually not sure who has the...
It would be China.
Really?
So they're way ahead.
So we would... It's not looking too good against a war with China right now.
No. If we were China has everything, right? So they have hypersonics, which THAAD cannot stop. Patriots cannot stop hypersonics. They have ballistics. They have everything you would need for that.
Also lots of people. And if they lost people, their country wouldn't melt down like us. If we started losing Americans, they could put like a million, you know, a couple million people up on the...
They really can. Yeah, I think their army has 2 million people in it, doesn't it?
Yeah, so imagine
that.
Well, you've been looking at drones for a while. Didn't you kind of get your start early on covering like the drone strikes, exposing the Biden drone strikes illegally?
Or Obama.
Oh, yeah, so Obama, not Biden.
Yeah, well, because that's been kind of U.S. warfare model was to put these drones out and then to target, you know, people, that, including Americans, which is where I had confronted Obama about it, which is that we had used drones to kill Anwar al-Awlaki, who was that Muslim cleric. He was in the U.S. The interesting thing about him is he was in the U.S. at 9/11. The CIA and the Pentagon actually recruited him to speak out as a moderate Muslim. And so he did, and he spoke on behalf of the administration, the Bush administration, about, you know, Muslims are not all bad, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem was he didn't know was they were using him and his connections to secretly bug all those mosques.
Oh, if they were like bugging all those.
Mm-hmm. And when he found out that was happening and they were rounding people up, he actually left the country. A U.S. citizen, by the way, born in Las Cruces, New Mexico. He left the country with his family and his 16-year-old son was with him, and he was also a U.S. citizen. They all went back to Yemen and he was there in Yemen. The interesting thing was he was listed as the number one terror suspect they were looking for, even though he never committed a terrorist act.
So he must have known some things he wasn't supposed to.
Must have.
Well, and killing an American citizen with a drone strike with no due process, that's completely against the Constitution.
Right, which is what happened. But he was on the kill list. And so it's like, well, but he's in another country. It's like, but what was his crime? The thing is, they say he inspired the underwear bomber, if you remember him, the shoe bomber, if you remember him. They had about six or seven people he inspired, by the way, who were never successful. all the people he inspired were suddenly were foiled, right? Mm-hmm. But he was the one who inspired them because of his rhetoric and his language, and so they killed him. So you didn't kill any of the guys who actually attempted a terrorist
attack.
Someone
for his language, that's an American citizen, yeah, seems a little odd.
Then 2 weeks later, his son's at a birthday party, and you drone struck the birthday party and killed him as well, and he was 16. And they lied.
So they targeted just the 16-year-old son?
Mm-hmm. At a birthday party.
So, yeah, there must have been something.
And they
there.
Claimed he was a enemy combatant and that he was 21. Wow. But then when journalists started looking at it, they're like, the guy, he wasn't 21, he was 16.
That's crazy.
Oh, well, our mistake. Sorry.
Oops.
Right. Because remember, the Israelis actually were the ones who started this. But the U.S. has adopted it in the war on terror, which is that any place we go and blow things up, we just call every male an enemy combatant.
Yeah, I think really the way we fought this Iran war was like completely brutal, but we got used to it from Israel, just seeing, oh, we're just bombing schools, this, that.
Yeah.
It's normalized it.
Yeah, in a way that, again, if you go back Iraq, you know, 25 years ago, we were not doing that, mm-hmm. right? We were not targeting schools, hospitals, churches.
I have friends that fought there. Like one of his friends that talked to him, like, because he's super anti-Israel. What woke you up? He's like, well, I'm a Green Beret. I fought in Iraq. This is not how we fought. We were just leveling things. This is clearly not, you know, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Israel does it in a totally different way. But Israel's lying, as you well know, about everything they're doing, right? Yeah. Israel pretends they're going into Gaza to clean up after October 7th. Obviously, October 7th was allowed.
Yeah, they allowed it. They're basically, it's a land grab. It's like what the people were saying all along, you know? I've only been studying this for a few years, but people are like, oh, Greater Israel Project. I'm like, oh, is that true? I'm not sure. And now you see, boom, they're taking Apple Maps. They're taking the village names off. They're pushing into Lebanon. They're pushing into Syria. They're pushing, taking the West Bank, taking Gaza.
Well, and look what they've done to Lebanon, right? In southern Lebanon, they've blown off every bridge that connects northern and southern Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone.
Yeah.
They have flattened entire towns and communities.
They're going in and just wiping them out.
Yeah. And then they're sending in construction crews and they're building on top of them already. They are already building on top of them. So the thing is, Israel knows two things. One, they know that they can because no one's going to stop them. So they go into these areas and they just, as fast as they can. I have a suspicion. I have a conspiracy theory. My conspiracy theory is that Israel never actually cared about Iran at all.
Mm.
That the reason they were pushing so hard for this thing with Iran to happen right now is so they could take
over Lebanon. That's interesting. I haven't thought about that.
It's a huge distraction.
I think they do want Iran off, but maybe not. Because most of the Muslims are actually allies with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize, like, all the other countries, America pays them, works out the deals. It's only like, mostly, there's a few of the, it's mostly just the Shiite Muslims are fighting them, which mm-hmm. is 15% of the Muslims.
Yes.
I mean, the Palestinians are Sunni, but most of the Sunni leaders are just like, oh, we'll take your money and let them get massacred.
Exactly. I think that with Iran, would they have liked it if the leadership was decapitated and a new, more moderate one came in? Sure, absolutely.
But it wasn't the primary.
Oh, the primary.
Yeah, you might be
primary
right.
is to take
Lebanon.
It's to take Syria, because then now they're starting to fight with Syria.
Expanding out.
They're arguing with Turkey, because they're saying Turkey's now the new problem, because Turkey says you're not taking Syria, right? They got the U.S. to install this al-Qaeda leader as now the head of Syria. Mm. Totally crazy. And then, of course, they were never going to allow the two-state solution with the Palestinians, because you can't have Greater Israel if that's the case. So I think a lot of what's happening with Iran is only happening. The reason they wanted to keep it going is
because now they could push in. Iran can help them. Interesting. Yeah. That's
you got to take.
I thought there. I think that's very, very possibly true.
Yeah,
I think they do want Iran out too because they oppose them. But that actually might be why they're pushing.
Would you like
right now? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's interesting. You know, because they are expanding. We got to wrap pretty soon. I want to hit. I won't go deep into this right now. I just want to touch upon.
Sure.
I saw you covered vaccines a little bit.
Yeah.
Have you only covered like COVID vaccine or have you covered all vaccines?
No. So again, OG of so many things. So if you go back 2013, 2014, was one of the first people to report on MMR vaccines. That's the measles, mumps, rubella, and the connections to autism, as well as one of the first to ever report on Dr. William Thompson. If you're familiar with him, he was the CDC doctor who blew the whistle and said that all of the MMR stuff that had shown connection to autism had been thrown out by the CDC because he was on that panel who threw it out. I've reported on the connections between autism and vaccines for a long time. Another thing that got me in trouble. But...
Yeah, you're not allowed to talk about this. Anything you're not allowed to talk about kind of drives me crazy. We should at least be able to look at the evidence, put it before us, and see what's what. Because clearly, autism's on the rise. And the amount of vaccines they're giving is on the rise.
Yep. Well, look at the numbers, and I have reported on this a long time ago too. So 1986, I think, was the year that that Congress created the Vaccine Injury Protection Act, right? And so basically what they did was said, you can't sue a vaccine maker if you're injured by a vaccine.
Even if it's, if the vaccine 100% does it to you and you can't sue them.
Right. You can't. And so they set up a fund through HHS, which allows you through a very difficult process to try to prove vaccine injury. Here's the very difficult thing about that, though, is if you have a two-year-old who was functioning well, was doing well, was reactive, they go in, they get all these shots, and then within 24 hours, all of a sudden, the kid's not responsive anymore. How do you prove in court?
You can't prove that. Yeah, they'll be like, oh, your kid could have just been this way.
And the kicker on that is, part of that HHS deal in vaccine court, a parent is not considered a fair witness. So if you have a two-year-old who's now damaged,
who you're around the most, like
who else is going to know?
The parents, maybe grandparents or something, but the parents are the ones that's around the kid, knows the behavior. Yeah, I talked to several women who said their kid completely changed after, I think it was around two.
Yeah.
Also, an interesting one is the sudden infant death syndrome.
Yeah.
I looked up that, and it's like, I was talking to ChatGPT or one of those, and it's like, no, it has no involvement. I go, okay, tell me like when the SIDS are and when the vaccine schedules are, exact same time.
Yeah.
Like, but no, I forget what it was. Was it like 6 months? And it's basically the identical, like almost all the deaths are within a couple of days of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that people don't realize too, is they'll say, well, but I took vaccines as a kid and it didn't have a problem. Mm-hmm. The vaccine schedule has changed so dramatically. It used to be you would get 3 to 4. At the time that the Vaccine Injury Protection Act was created, you would get 3 to 4 vaccines.
Yeah.
Now it's over 30 vaccines that you're given. Mm-hmm. So when you increase the number of injections you're getting on a child by 10.
Yeah.
The other thing is, we know for a fact that this should be a safe thing to say, and I've said it for a lot of years, right?
Yeah.
Not all vaccines are safe for all people.
Yeah. I mean, that seems obvious.
That you would think that's obvious, right? Should be, but you get demonized for saying it, but it's like, again, logic, common sense says that is true.
Yeah.
Also, not all vaccines are safe at all times.
Mm-hmm.
If you said, I have the flu, and you went to the doctor, and the doctor said, take these pills, I'm going to inject you with this, you say, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm putting a lot of stuff in there. How do we know that all these things don't counteract each other, right, or affect each other? Well, with vaccines, they'll take a child in now. They'll give them 6 at a time.
That's crazy.
Right? They're getting 2 in their shoulder, 2 here. It's totally crazy. And so, but I, same thing with you. What changed it for me is I went to Minnesota. I already started to report on it. I was invited to go to Minnesota, and I met with families in Minnesota who were trying to get a law passed there. And to hear their stories, you know, when you talk about a child who,
like, you know, your
is
kids.
3 years old, they get vaccines, and the next day they just bang their head against the wall, and they're not responsive.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the kid after that, it doesn't change. What infuriates me is when you have like journalists and media who, when those parents try to talk, are like, oh yeah, but you don't know what you're talking about because a doctor said this.
Doctor said that's not possible. You're a kid. You don't know your own kid.
You don't know. Yeah, sad story that happened to you, bro, but it's totally normal.
Yeah,
it's not normal.
Demonize these people.
Mm-hmm. It's just, it's horrendous. I think what COVID did, though, if there's a positive,
made people see it.
Yeah. It made people go, wait a minute, if this is true of this one, could it also be true over here?
Well, I think anyone that really deeply looked into that vaccine was very clear that it wasn't very good. I mean, It takes a lot of effort to properly research these vaccines. That's the only one that I properly researched. But to me, it's very apparent.
But did you know that the mRNA vaccine was actually created 6 months before COVID?
Yeah, that's weird, right?
So then all of a sudden COVID comes on and you're like, oh, we have a vaccine for it.
Right, isn't that weird? We already had the vaccine for COVID when he came to see. That's just strange.
Yeah.
I mean, Gaddafi, you see the little speech where he says, well, we have diseases we're going to release. And we already have the vaccines made to profit on.
Yeah.
There's an old Gaddafi speech. And then he got killed not long after that.
Yep. It's. I think if you look at what's happening, again, I was the first guy as a reporter to actually say it came from a lab. Mm-hmm. The COVID came out of a lab. You ever saw Plandemic? I'm sure you have.
I've seen the movie. Plandemic.
If you have not seen it, it's incredible.
I highly
recommend it. A friend of mine, Mickey Willis, created it. But I'm the voice he uses that explains.
Yeah, I don't think I saw that. I'll watch that.
Oh, you got to watch it. Because the thing that's about Plandemic that's so interesting is they show you how the WHO held, like, what, a year before COVID, they held a simulated pandemic doing the exact same thing.
That's crazy. What was that called?
It was like Agenda 201 or something.
Yeah, 201. I think it was 201. They basically planned what they would do to get the police to go along, the social media, the media.
Lockdowns.
Yeah.
Masking, distancing. Like every single thing that played out during COVID was pre-done. That's why they called it a plandemic, right? This wasn't a pandemic. It was a plan. This was something that was organized. And it was a test run.
Yeah.
For how are we going to control? And I'll tell you something. What worries me right now that I think that we're moving toward more than anything is to see a repeat of that, especially happening in Europe and Asia with oil right now.
Okay, you see there's no oil. There's no oil shortage. Yeah, it's like our governments are always trying to manipulate and, you know, they're not our friend, I realize. Right. One thing, I never had much opinion on climate change, you know. I want clean water. I want clean forests. But I notice these people, they're never pushing anything that will actually help. It's just for control. Then COVID hit and I realized, oh, it's all the same people. Yes. It's the exact same people. They don't care. And they're flying private planes.
Yep.
They're buying houses on the ocean.
Yep. Well, make no mistake. People who talk about the climate are not environmentalists.
Yeah, because that's
don't care about the environment.
Yeah, this is separate things. Like, I'm environmentalist. Yep. I don't want to, like, destroy our trees or forests. I want all this stuff clean. But that's not what climate change is about.
It has nothing to do with that. In fact, most of the technology that they're pushing for to resolve issues of climate are terrible for the environment.
Exactly.
Right? They actually destroy the environment. So I like what you said. They're not your friend, right? It's like they're just not. These people are not on your side. Globalists are not trying to protect you. They're trying to manipulate and control. When you look at, and I'd say something else on the vaccine thing, just go back there for a second. People who like are trying to understand how far this stuff goes, go back and research. I did a couple of stories on this back in 2021. But if you go back and look at Bill Gates and the Gates Foundation and the vaccines they brought to Africa and what they were actually, Bill Gates was actually banned from multiple African countries because he was sterilizing the populations there.
Wow.
And this is not, again, this is not conspiracy theory.
Yeah,
this is all factual, proven. Governments have come out and said, this is what he did to our people. These were the vaccines they were giving them.
Well, he's trying to eliminate humans. He talks about there's too many people, and then he's trying to give you vaccines to help you. Like, no, I'll
pass. And he's trying to make all the meatless.
Yeah, he's good friends with Jeffrey Epstein, too.
He only got me a couple of Russian prostitutes. I don't know about the rest of this.
There was some fight in there. I think he was mad over the Russian prostitutes, and he, like, cut Jeffrey Epstein off his gaming service for, like, a minute, and it was, like, a big fight. Oh, he wanted to use, like, his game system, or he was all mad about it. That's I can't really tell. I read too many of the emails. But
I like the email when Epstein wrote it to him as a draft to himself, explaining how he was offended that Gates would try to sneak antibiotics into his wife's food to cover up the STDs that he has now.
Oh, it's pretty funny. Well, we went a while. I mean, there's a bunch more I could talk about, but I think it's for wrap pretty soon. Any other things you want to hit real quick before?
I just encourage people to follow along on X. I'm on there, Ben Swan _. Instagram is the same name.
You have a website and stuff too?
We do, truthandmedia.com. Right now it's down, so if people go to it, because we're revamping it right now, but within the next 2-3 weeks, it'll be back up.
Yeah.
Truthandmedia.com.
But you're still doing the segments and stuff, right?
Every single day.
But those are individual. You have your own crew, so you have full independence now?
We do. And we've been doing that for a long time. Yeah.
It's like you have to.
We have a series that we did on October 7th that people can check out if they want to. And again, you have to give it a couple of weeks before the Truth and Media site to come back up. But that's out there. And we also have it on the X.
So you put most of your stuff on the website and you'll throw it on X and stuff too.
Yep. Nice. People can see it. But and then I encourage people, if you have something that you're like, hey, you should look into this, send it to us, because we're always looking for stories.
Open minded to look at stories, do real investigation. You know, it's important to have voices, real media. And there's starting to be a lot of people that's like now that are destroying the mainstream media.
Yeah.
And they don't like it. I don't know what the next move is going to be. Are they going to be able to ban us all? Are they not? Because they're kind of freaking out right now trying to figure out how to deal with that.
I think. Maybe if I was to end on something, I'd say this. Years ago, it was mainstream against the independents.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few of us who like broke free. And then all of a sudden, over the last 10 years, I've seen a lot of people come into the independent media space, influencer space. Now, so I do not consider myself an influencer, but a lot of people who are in that space, right? And now what we're seeing is that the mainstream is so obsolete that we're watching a war happen between
they're going to try to sabotage and come in, pay people, put their own people. So it's going to be interesting. You've got to be careful who to trust. And like me, I don't know all the answers. I'm just trying to find the truth. You know, I'll admit I'm wrong. I just try to look at stuff with an open mind and see. I can see almost everything they're telling us is a lie.
Right. And when you're looking at people, I would say always look for people who are consistent no matter who's in office.
Yeah, look at their track record through years and see, you know, like I think I'm on the right side of pretty much every story. The COVID, the maybe get a few things. Well, some people might disagree with my takes on things, but right. I think pretty much I'm consistent. I'm anti-war, Republican, anti-war, a Democrat.
Yeah.
I'm pro free speech for both.
Yeah, exactly. If you're consistent in those things, I think it makes a huge difference because it means it's about principles and not about people. And as soon as it becomes about people, well, if my guy does it, then it's good. But if your guy does it, it's bad. And unfortunately, I would say right now, the biggest influencers on social are those people.
Yeah, they're losing support, though.
Yeah.
Those people are losing support fast.
Yeah. But they're also damaging the ability of everyone else on that space. Because at least when it was mainstream versus independent, people who were kind of breaking free and going over there could find consistency. Because here's the thing. When there's very few in the pile, and social media was a little different than it is now, you had to know your stuff.
Yeah.
Because you were competing with huge newsrooms.
Yeah.
And you had to be able to say, like, I got to be able to back up everything I say. Now, people will say one thing, they just say whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And it's in a feed.
Well, exactly.
And it's kind of running.
You know, that's why I learned, like, okay, I have a bigger platform now. I have to be a little more careful with what I say.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a news program. Like, you're news, so you have to really investigate it. So I don't go quite as far as you, but I still need to be careful not to get things wrong and
hurt other
people. So,
yeah. Well, people start to trust you.
Right? Yeah. So I'm like,
and you got to take that
serious. I guess you're out.
Yeah.
So, hey, well, thanks so much.
Appreciate you.
We'll do it again at some point.
Absolutely. Thank you.
As many of you know, I have many controversial guests, so that comes at a cost of being demonetized everywhere. So if you want to support the program, go to fightbackpodcast.com, and I have all kinds of merch on there, whether it's jiu-jitsu, fighting, political, and other accessories. And thanks for the support.